Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning right here on AM 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The stock market has sunk to the lowest level in 5 years. The Dow lost 427 points, closed below 8,000 at 7,997. The Nasdaq was off 96 points.
The market has tested the 5-year lows and has unfortunately broken through those lows.
That's Ted Weisberg at UBS Financial. Oil prices continued down, $53.62 a barrel today. Why? Today's drumbeat of unhappy economic news was like sticking your head inside the timpani.
Policymakers now believe this recession is going to last through next summer, and it seems as though every day we're getting more proof that the recession is getting even deeper. We also found out that home construction is not recovering at all. In fact, it is getting even worse. And applications for mortgages are also low, even though mortgage rates have come down a bit.
CBS's Alexis Christopher is there. The White House has said the financial bailout is not for propping up failing businesses, not even the car companies. Members of Congress are not finding enough votes so far to come up with something else.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The auto industry debate is becoming a blame game. Congressional Democratic leaders say the administration should save the industry from collapse. Press Secretary Dana Perino challenged Congress to find a plan that avoids using financial bailout money.
The Congress will bear responsibility for anything that happens in the next couple of months during their long vacation.
The White House says money to help the automakers should come from an existing Energy Department fund to boost production of fuel-efficient cars. Peter Mayer, CBS News, The White House.
Amazing when you realize the Yugo, cheapest car anywhere, has been around 22 years, even though they stopped being sold in the U.S. in 92. The last one rolls off the production line in Serbia tomorrow. Alaska's Ted Stevens has conceded defeat after 4 decades in the Senate and 1 corruption conviction. Democrat Mark Begich wins and moves the party within 2 votes of a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. Proposition 8, the voters' decision to write marriage in traditional terms into California Constitution is going to the state's Supreme Court, the will of the people to be tested.
There's no surprise here that these cases have been filed, but it's a little surprising that the California court would agree so quickly to hear and decide this issue just weeks after the election. The question is whether you can, under the state's constitution, take away certain rights by majority vote.
CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen. A new safe haven law appears on its way to passage in Nebraska. It's been rewritten to make it clear the intention is to protect babies up to 1 month old from being abandoned. The previous law, vaguely worded, had resulted in children up to their teenage years being dumped at Nebraska's hospitals. The governor has said he will sign the new bill when he gets it. Again, on Wall Street today, the Dow lost 427 points. The Nasdaq was off 96. This is CBS News.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
When my baby left for college, I took some classes of my own.
Left, right, turn.
Dance classes. That's when I started needing a pain reliever for my sore legs. Then I upgraded my computer and had to get a headache medicine, too. For every new pain, I had a different pain reliever. But now I'm all Advil. It's my every pain reliever. Advil works wherever I hurt, and nothing's proven stronger on tough pain than Advil. I'm all Advil. Are you all Advil?
Use as directed. Compared to OTC pain relievers.
The Los Angeles Auto Show has cars. Gorgeous cars. Green, electric, and exotics that cost as much as a house.
Would you like to go for a test drive?
Sure. Of course.
BMW CEO Norbert Reithofer giving LA's deputy mayor a test drive of an electric version of the Mini Cooper. Now, this is a very limited production vehicle.
By the end of the year, we will have 500 Mini E's available to customers in Los Angeles and New York City.
Those customers will give BMW feedback to help in the development of future electric vehicles. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Reading articles and books while on the porcelain throne is common. How about texting messages to friends? If you do, you have much in common with the British, whose survey says do that a lot. Men, by the way, more likely than women to look for distractions like magazines or ways to pass the time while perched. Women tend to focus on the task at hand. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you hear a lot of messages trying to get you to buy something. Well, this is a message about buying into something. Let's redefine Christmas. Consider giving those you care about donations to their favorite charities in their names, and ask that they do the same for you. Your giving will do far more good in the world, and chances are you'll like the way it feels. If this sounds like something you can buy into, visit the website redefinechristmas.org.
Looking for a market-proof vest? Try this on for size. A market-proof CD from GMAC Bank. It's FDIC insured. And better yet, their 12-month CD has a 4.36% annual percentage yield. That's positively one of the best rates available, and it guarantees your money makes money. Lock in now. Go to GMACBank.com or call 1-866-246-BANK. Open a CD with as little as $500 and feel confident knowing your money is wearing body armor. GMAC Bank. Smart. Simple. Safe. Member FDIC.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, live from the left coast. Got a great show lined up for you today, as usual. And we're blaming my producer, Katrina Rill. It's all her fault. Baby. In a moment, Paul Waldman will join us from Media Matters, and we'll take a look at what's going on in the corporate media. Later this hour, we're going to take a virtual trip to the Central Valley of California to a town called Mountain House that is above sea level, but according to a recent survey, as many as 90% of the homes are underwater. That means people owe more than the house is worth. And it is causing big problems there, and it's a microcosm of foreclosures and other economic strife in America today. We've got an expert who's going to give us an overview statistically, and then we're going to talk to the administrator of the town, Jerry Torres. That's coming up later this hour. Next hour, Phyllis Bennis returns to our program. She's at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she has published three different primers this year, and they're on thorny issues of foreign policy disputes. I've got them in front of me, Understanding the U.S.-Iran Crisis, Ending the Iraq War, and Understanding the Palestinian-Israeli Conflict. And we're going to talk with Phyllis about those issues. Plus, we're going to be joined by Paul LaRudy from the Free Gaza Movement. Gaza has, the conflict has re-erupted there. And we will talk about that and get some first-person account from Paul. That's coming up. And the Free Speech Zone will be yours for calls and comments. That's in our third hour today. You can call me before then, too, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And as many of you know, I've been getting up before dawn and coming here to the studio to do a separate radio show for Air America this week. There's a lot of fill-in opportunities for guys like me because most of the hosts went on the Air America cruise, which has not yet been hijacked. But I've been sitting in for Lionel, and our friend Paul Waldman, senior fellow at Media Matters, was kind enough to join me there on Monday. Nice to talk to you again, Paul.
I'm happy to be back with you.
Well, it's good to chat with you. And there's a study that you have, there was a study conducted a couple of years ago at Media Matters about who appears on the Sunday political talk shows, Face the Nation, Meet the Press, Fox News Sunday, and the ABC political show that George Stephanopoulos is the host of. And your survey showed that it has been dominated. The guests have all, largely been conservatives by a very high percentage. And Media Matters has been taking a look since the election. And the first two Sundays following the election, we would expect to see the victorious Democrats parading across the sets of these political talk shows. Is that what your survey, your study shows?
You would expect that, but that's not what we found. And to put it in context, when we came out we've done the study a couple different times, updating it as time has gone on. And in previous times, when we came out with this study showing that there were more Republicans than Democrats who were appearing on the Sunday shows, more conservative journalists than progressive journalists, the response that we got from the producers is, well, you know, the Republicans are the ones in charge. So naturally, we're talking to the newsmakers. They're going to end up being on more often than the Democrats. Well, now the Democrats are the one in charge. And we just had this election where a Democratic candidate for president won a rather large victory,
mm-hmm.
and Democrats increased their margins in the House and the Senate. And you would think that if that was their rationale before, that they are talking to the people who are the newsmakers who are going to be in charge. Well, mm-hmm. there should be more Democrats on the Sunday shows than Republicans.
Well, it could be called a sweep. The Democrats swept control of the Senate, the House, and the White House, and that is something that doesn't happen very often. It is quite remarkable, and you would think that the networks would respond by saying, ah, shift, sea change, time to invite some different people. Maybe John McCain has been on too many times.
Yes, and just as an aside, John McCain has been on the Sunday shows over the last 10 years over 150 times.
Ouch. I want him to join my union and pay dues.
So when we looked at this for the first 2 weeks after the election, what we found is that it actually wasn't the case. I mean, let's take Face the Nation, for example, on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
In the first 2 weeks after the election, they had four Republicans and conservatives on, compared to two Democrats and progressives.
Mm-hmm.
And that was almost exactly the same as they did the first 2 weeks after Election Day 2004, when the Republicans won big victories and George Bush got reelected. And that year, the first 2 weeks after the election, it was four Republicans and conservatives, one Democrat. So we saw the same thing on Fox News Sunday, which, you know, might not surprise you all that much. They had twice as many Republicans and conservatives on in the first 2 weeks after this election as they did Democrats and progressives, which was about what they did after 2004 when the Republicans won.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be that the rule is when Republicans win, you have to talk to them because they're the ones who are making the news. When Democrats win, you have to talk to the Republicans so they can tell you what's really going on.
Well, and this helps us understand the meme, the thread that has been pretty persistent in the corporate media since the election, that this is a center-right nation, and Obama should be very careful about putting too many liberals into the cabinet and about moving too far to the left. And that belies the surveys of voters on almost every issue except same-sex marriage. People are very liberal when it comes to health care. People are liberal in their views of the role of government and taxes. And you can tick it right down the list, and you see that the electorate is much less conservative than the media portrays it.
Absolutely. And not only are they electing Democrats at every level, a Democratic president, Democratic Congress, there are more Democratic governors, more Democratic state legislators, but as you said, on almost every single issue, the progressive position is the more popular one. And I would even say that on same-sex marriage, that's true. Because let's think about this. Just 10 years ago, the idea that anyone would even be advocating for gay marriage was considered to be so radical that it was just too absurd even to bring up. And advocacy of civil unions was also considered a position that was radical, that no one who was running for office would embrace, certainly. Mm-hmm. And now here we are in 2008, support for civil unions is the median position of the American voter. You, in surveys, around 30 to 40% of people oppose any kind of legal recognition for same-sex unions. But the rest of the people, a majority, around 60%, either support civil unions or mm-hmm. they support full marriage rights. So the distance we've traveled in such a short time is just incredible on this issue. And the people who are the most progressive on it, of course, are younger people. And they're going to be around for a lot longer than the people who are the most conservative on it, which is that pre-baby boom generation who are dying off. So even on that issue, they may have a kind of a temporary majority, but there's no doubt about where things are going. And I think oftentimes I've had conversations with conservatives where they'll say in private, we know we've lost on the issue of gay marriage. It's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
So even on that one, which is the one thing they can point to and say, oh, you know, we still have a majority here, it's because they've moved to the left to go around and get in front of public opinion. So there's no question that if you look across the broad range of what people, how people vote and what they think about issues, that you're absolutely right. This is a center-left country.
Now, we can understand the interests of Fox and the whole zeitgeist there, and they do, while they claim to be fair and balanced, anybody who looks for more than 20 minutes can see what their biases are. So let's eliminate them from the discussion. But ABC, CBS, NBC, isn't it in their self-interest to be embracing the shift in the political winds in this country, if only for ratings?
You'd think it would be, but I think they're very, very slow to respond. And for a long time, they've kind of gotten used to this idea that it's the Republicans who are kind of in touch with the regular people out there. They're the ones who have their finger on the pulse, and Democrats are these weak elitists whose ideas don't really resonate with a majority of the public. And that's no longer true, if it ever was. But I think that in Washington and in the elite press corps, they are really just kind of taking their time in actually realizing it. How long it'll take them, I don't know, but they've been so used to thinking of Democrats as weak losers that it may take them a little while to realize that they may go back to being weak losers someday, but right now Democrats look pretty strong and they look like winners.
Yeah, Paul Waldman's with us from MediaMatters.org. Visit their website. There's a lot of great information there and analysis, like you just heard, of really the underlying issues that drive the political commentary in our country. Paul, you and I did discuss this the other day, but for our listeners here on my program, I wanted to just update them on some of the ravings of Michael Savage. In particular, the comments that he has made, raising questions about the manner in which Barack Obama's grandmother died just a day and a half before the election, strikes me as bizarre and the kind of thing that broadcasters really should take a second look at and say, you know, we're responsible for this stuff that's spewing out of the speakers driven by our FCC-licensed radio station. And you know, this goes beyond, in my view, the limits of free speech or even good taste, and into just downright psychotic expression.
Yeah, well, Michael Savage has always been a pretty repellent character, but the fact that he's been railing against Barack Obama for a couple of years now, and the majority of the American public actually voted for the guy, I think maybe has driven Savage off the edge. And so he said on his radio show not long ago, first of all, he's still peddling this bizarre conspiracy theory that Barack Obama wasn't really born in America.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets on the air and say, what country is he from? Why was his birth certificate never produced? Well, the truth is that actually Obama put his birth certificate up on his website.
Yeah.
And then, on that note, Paul,
I got an email from a woman yesterday who has formed a group, and they are trying to challenge Obama's qualifications to be president at the Electoral College. And it just seems really bizarre, and it's framed around, do you want to support the Constitution? And they're basically trying to say that he doesn't meet the qualifications to be president. So it's one of those threads that is kind of developing a life of its own.
Yeah, it's the number of conspiracy theories are out there are just crazy. And if anybody thought that they were going to stop after the election was over, well, it turns out that they're wrong. Getting back to Michael Savage, he then went on to ask why in the world did he, Obama, take time off from the campaign to visit the grandmother who then suddenly and suspiciously died virtually the night before the election. So he actually seems to be implying that Obama might have gone to Hawaii to kill his own grandmother. I mean, what do you say about people like that? I think we're going to be hearing a lot of this stuff over the next 4 or 8 years.
That's why I use the term psychotic. It goes beyond human explanation. We'll take a break and return with Paul Waldman from Media Matters, and we'll talk about a column he's written about the return of the wonks in the Obama administration. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell, putting the service back in service stations.
The holidays can be a time of hope and connection, and can bring opportunities to spend more time with friends and family. For some, this can be the most difficult time of the year. This year, think of the true spirit of the holidays and consider giving the gift of a renewed connection with someone you care about. I'm Mark LeCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Santa Claus and Dr. Chaim Barton. I can work with you and your loved ones to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection this holiday season. I still have a few spaces left and would love to help. Please call one of our elves for an appointment. 831-818-4033. That's area code 831-818-4033.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. La Sala's By Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. La Sala's By Right Market and Deli, a Manpa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Media Matters, that's MediaMatters.org. And separately, he's published a commentary piece that is up at the American Prospect, Prospect.org, right now, entitled, Can Obama Make Wonks and Hacks Work Together? And you make the point here, Paul Waldman, that we are returning to a zeitgeist that actually values government and thinks that government, properly operated, can do some good. And there's a lot of work that government is being asked to do right now, from bailouts to wars and foreign policy and health care insurance expansion, all of those issues. And we do see an interesting confluence here developing in the transition of political paybacks and people who are expert on the subjects that they're being brought to government for.
Yeah, it's a radical idea that you should actually hire people who know what they're doing. And this is kind of an eternal Washington conflict between the wonks, the policy people, and the hacks, the political people. And there's always a push and pull in any administration. But what happened in the Bush administration was that the wonks got completely marginalized, and everything was run by the hacks. And so, you know, Karl Rove was what passed for a policy expert. And partly it was a function of philosophy, because to a great extent, in a lot of areas, they really didn't even care whether or not the things that they were doing would actually have some good effect in the end. I mean, let's take cutting taxes for the wealthy. Well, they offered all kinds of rationales for that, that, oh, it would stimulate the economy and we'd all benefit, it would all trickle down to everybody else. But they really didn't care that much about that. The point was to cut taxes for the wealthy. I mean, as far as they were concerned, it was a moral imperative. And you saw that in a lot of areas, that whether or not the policy actually worked and did what it was supposed to was almost beside the point. They just didn't care. Mm-hmm. And that's why you get, you know, heck of a job brownie. With the Obama administration, you know, really with any administration that's driven by progressives, there's a different kind of philosophy, a different approach to government. If you're starting from the standpoint that you think government can actually do things, well, then you're going to want to hire people who actually know what they're doing and are competent.
And so I think it's interesting. We've learned today that Tom Daschle is probably going to be named the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And I think that's an interesting approach, because he's been burnishing his wonk credentials at the Center for American Progress. He wrote a book about health care reform. But he's clearly a very accomplished hack as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it is an interesting choice. And one of the things I think it suggests is that they are going to actually try to make a big push on health care, because if you want to actually get something passed, it's going to be a very difficult job legislatively to get through to Congress. I mean, let's remember, Bill Clinton's health care plan in 1993 never even came to a vote.
Yeah.
And Tom Daschle was the majority leader in the Senate, and someone who knows Congress very, very well, and has also turned himself into a health care wonk. He's somebody who I think you would pick if you had in mind that you were going to make a very big push in Congress to actually get a major health care reform passed.
Mm-hmm. So are we going to have conflicts among the Democrats appointed in the administration? Will the hack-wonk axis be a source of conflict?
I think that's inevitable, that you can't have an administration that doesn't have conflicts between the political people and the policy people. It's always going to happen. But so far, it seems that Obama is bringing the same kind of level of care to his transition that he brought to his campaign. I mean, they started planning for this transition months ago, and they're going about it in a very systematic way, and it seems like it's being done much more carefully than, say, Bill Clinton's transition was, which was kind of a mess. I think even he himself admits that now.
And Zoe Baird does, too.
Yeah. I don't imagine we'll have any. I know that question is very explicitly on the form that you have to fill out about do you have any illegal
nannies.
Immigrant nannies.
Yeah.
So they seem to be learning from some of those mistakes of the past. I mean, obviously they're going to have setbacks, but But at the moment, you know, one thing that you can say about his campaign was it was extremely competent.
Yep.
And if they bring that same kind of competence to their governing, then they'll be in very good shape.
Read the commentary. It's at prospect.org. That's the website of the American Prospect. Paul Waldman, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right. My pleasure. Coming up next, we'll take a look at that California town that's above sea level and most of the homeowners are underwater. Mountain House, next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Home Medics. Get the perfect holiday gift for this season. Affordable luxuries that will give someone relief from stress and pressure all year long. I'm talking about Home Medics heated shiatsu massagers, starting at as little as $49.99 and available at retailers nationwide. I'm Charles Osgood. Did you know that mortgage loans are not the only loans that are bundled up and sold to investors? The same thing can happen when you use your credit card or take out an auto loan or a student loan. And like the bundled subprime mortgages, these consumer debts have grown over the last decade, too, by 85%. And those chickens are also coming home to roost. That story after this. In these stressful times, we're all looking for holiday gifts that will be appreciated all year long, but are also practical. Let me tell you about something new that I now have, the latest wonderful Homedics Shiatsu Massaging Back Cushion with Heat. Homedics works wonders this holiday season with a full line of shiatsu massagers with heat, starting at just $49.99. The one I have is the Shiatsu 1. It is great, let me tell you. It has both back and shoulder massages that feel like a professional masseur with four hands. No appointment needed, though, and no big pricey massaging chair, either. You can use it with any chair in the house. I sure do look forward to using mine at the end of a stressful day. If there's any gift more perfect to get or to give this season than the Shiatsu 1, I sure haven't seen it. The Homedic Shiatsu Massaging Back Cushion is truly state-of-the-art. It's earned the Good Housekeeping Seal. You deserve one, so does someone you care about. Get yours today, if you can get the other one tomorrow. Homedics, the leaders in massage innovation, available at retailers everywhere or homedics.com. Everybody loves driving a new car.
It's got that new car smell.
Yet, a lot of people who would have been able to buy new cars because they could finance the purchase with an auto loan find that now they can't.
This market is currently in distress.
That's because up to 40% of such loans were securitized, that is to say, bundled and sold to investors around the world. And the people have been so burned by what's happened to mortgage loans that they don't want to have anything to do with any instruments that are based on consumer loans either. Vince Reinhart, one-time director of the Federal Reserve Board's Division of Monetary Affairs, is now with the American Enterprise Institute. As he explained to CBS News correspondent Wyatt Andrews,
investors are suspicious of securitized products. So they're no longer willing to buy those products. Their business model, make the loan, get it out the door to the investor, make new loans, doesn't work anymore.
And that's what's frozen.
Banks say they're still making consumer loans.
Well, I'd say that they are.
But, says Diane Casey Landry of the American Bankers Association,
for the consumer, it's a much tighter market out there today. The credit standards have tightened, and you've seen a retrenchment as the non-bank players have left the marketplace.
So now you know. The Osgood File. Transcripts, podcasts, and MP3s of these programs can be found at theosgoodfile.com. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or a consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Southern California just recovering from some wildfires. But the real calamity is not floods. It's homeowners who are underwater in a figurative sense. Next, we're going to profile a California community called Mountain House. It's well above sea level, but a majority of the homes are underwater.
Father West is Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep you coming around. In the middle of our street, our house. In the middle of our house, it has a crowd.
That's our house over there on Prosperity Street.
And it's usually.
Yeah, we bought it as a foreclosure.
Our mom, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house. In the middle of our street, our house.
In a few minutes, we'll talk with Jerry Torres. He is the administrator for the Community Services District of Mountain House, California, and he'll give us the up-close account. But first, let's look at it from outer space, the long view. Mark Fleming is the chief economist with First American CoreLogic, and they follow the real estate market in detail in this country and keep statistics on the various issues here of homeowners who are current with their mortgages, those who are falling behind, those whose home price values have dropped below the amount they owe on their mortgage. Those who are pending for what we call short sales, which is where the bank cooperates and writes down part of their balance on the mortgage to enable you to sell the house at the current market value. And then, of course, the worst-case scenario is a foreclosure where the homeowners can no longer pay the note and the bank takes the house back. And I want to thank you for joining us today, Mark Fleming. Give us the overview here. According to this New York Times article, a front-page story published on Veterans Day, November 11th, Mountain House may be the most underwater community in America today.
That's right. By our estimation, when considering the current market values as of September of homes with mortgages, comparing those to outstanding mortgages on those homes, that Mountain House, that particular zip code, has the highest share of homes that are underwater, meaning the mortgage amounts are worth more than the home values.
Mm-hmm. And this is a distinction certainly nobody wants to earn, but just to put a context around this, the Las Vegas, Clark County, Nevada is right behind them with 87% of the homes in a specific zip code underwater. I see there are a bunch of zip codes there in Clark County. I'm looking at this table that was published in the New York Times. So it ranges in the Nevada area there from 87 down to 68%. The next most vulnerable area, Lee County, Florida. And the third in the Inland Empire of California, Riverside County, California, where it ranges from 69 to 77%. What is the common thread in the decline in home prices and the pressure on these homeowners?
Well, yeah, so you mentioned some key areas. When we estimate it nationally, it's about 7.5 million mortgages, properties with mortgages, or 18% of all of those properties, and clearly dominated by states like California, Nevada, and actually Michigan is the second at the state level behind Nevada.
Okay.
But the common theme, obviously, is, you know, heavy declines in house prices. These are also markets that had high house price appreciation, and a lot of Nevada in particular and the zip codes there, and then places like Mountain House and some of these zip codes in California are dominated more by newer home stocks, new construction over the last few years, people buying these homes in these bedroom communities to the major metro areas, having very little time to build up equity. buying at relatively high levels as house prices were rising, and now that house prices have corrected, these are the types of homeowners who are more at risk of being in a negative equity position.
And some of those people got 100% or in some cases 110% mortgages based on the value of the home at the time they purchased it. And, of course, many of those were these loans that include escalating payments over time. And so that squeeze crunched a lot of people. At what point do you believe, Mark Fleming, that people recognized that the real estate market will not always go up? Realists knew that it's a cyclical phenomenon, but there are many people who were kind of, for one reason or another, led to believe that this is the safest investment that you can make, this is the American dream, and you should put everything you can into your real property.
Right. I think for geeky economists such as myself who track this stuff every day, we noticed that house price appreciation rates started to moderate from their peaks in the middle of 2006. And I don't think it really hit the public consciousness until about the middle of 2007. So we're about 18 months into this from a public consciousness perspective that house prices won't always go up. And obviously now everyone is dealing with the fact that house prices are declining greatly. But one has to remember that while certainly people got the looser underwriting standards of the last few years certainly haven't helped the situation with regard to their more individuals getting high LTV loans or more than 100% LTV loans to start with.
That's loan to value. Go ahead.
Right. Mm-hmm. In terms of loan to value ratios, but the to be in a negative equity position is not necessarily, it doesn't guarantee foreclosure, right? I mean, many people who live in their homes when they're in a negative equity position will continue to pay their mortgages because they're generating utility of shelter from these places. This is the home they live in. They send their kids to the community schools there. I think the real problem that we're concerned as economists are concerned about now is that the combination of high shares of negative equity with rising unemployment rates and the inability of individuals to make their mortgage payments, and when those two things coincide, we're faced with very few options. You can't sell, you can't refinance. We're looking at having to go into deep delinquency levels and look at potential loan modification or foreclosure options.
Well, and Mark Fleming, I'm not an expert on this, but I am in love with a woman who works in real estate, and it's very difficult in the Bay Area. But over in the Central Valley, where Mountain House is located, the market has generally just come to a standstill. There are no buyers because nobody knows where the bottom is, and nobody wants to pay too much for a property today. And the sellers have no options, really. And once they hit the wall, they have a choice of a short sale with no buyer. That's not a choice. They can walk away from the home and ruin their credit rating, risk, the trade-off there is to ruin your credit rating instead of going into bankruptcy, or you can attempt to save the home by going into bankruptcy. Now, there are a couple of other options, like workouts with the lender, but for the most part, those are not so attractive and not so easy to work through. And so in some parts of California, and presumably the areas you mentioned like Nevada, Florida, and Michigan, the real estate market is essentially just locking down.
Right. I think you make a number of good points. I mean, no one really likes to catch a falling knife, right?
Yeah.
So the buyer side of the market sits on the sideline and waits. Those who don't have to sell their homes at this time and continue to make their mortgage payments hunker down. It's the unfortunate few who either can't make their mortgage payments or have to sell for some reason due to a change of job or a relocation or something like that, and that are sort of stuck in a very difficult position. Ultimately, what happens here is that prices continue to decline, sort of the price level continues to decline until such a point where buyers say, it's too good of a deal, I'm going to jump in and buy it. And we've seen that in some places, at least seasonally, in recent months with increased activity in terms of sale volumes in some markets over the last couple of months. Probably a lot of foreclosure activity, buying foreclosure sales and things like that. But ultimately, it's the corollary really would be the value investor on the stock market. Ultimately, when the P.E. ratios in the stock market get so good and so the price-rent ratios in the real estate market as the corollary gets too good to be true, people will start jumping back in, and that's what we would need to unlock that situation. But until that happens, individuals who are in these positions obviously face some challenging decisions to be made.
Well, and the pressures suggest that the spiral will continue downward because layoffs continue, lending is constricted, people are uncertain about their futures, businesses are declining, so that entrepreneurs and others who may have a cash cushion are very cautious about making new investments, whether it's in real estate or trying to expand the business here at a difficult time. And so that leads me to my next question, and you can reject it by saying, I don't have a crystal ball. But, Mark, where is the bottom?
Okay, I don't have a crystal ball. but I think there's a couple of things that can be said here. First of all, to be in a high negative equity share, a marketplace like Mountain House doesn't necessarily mean that they're under great mortgage distress. I mean, it really is what you were referring to. It's the combination of these economic stress events causing people to not be able to pay their mortgages with them already being in a negative equity state. And that's why we look at markets actually up in the upper Midwest with the auto industry and higher than average, the national average unemployment rates as being almost more concerning than some micro markets in California that may have a higher negative equity share, but a more robust economy or less likelihood that those individuals would be unemployed. The interesting thing to consider here is that this is the first time in quite some time that we've had a housing recession in combination with an economic recession. The last economic recession coincided with a housing boom, and it was the early 90s economic recession was a very relatively extremely mild, barring Southern California, a mild or non-existent housing recession. So I think the fair point to say here is, yeah, we're staring at a combination of the two together in this environment, and while I don't have a crystal ball that says where's the bottom, I can say that even much of the news as of today and last week indicates to, I don't think there's any positive factors out there at the moment saying that things could get better, that all the news is relatively negative, the magnitudes of which are, I guess, the crystal, we would need the crystal ball for.
Yeah. Well, and the other question I was going to ask was to look at historical patterns, but you just pointed out that it's rare that we have the broad-based economic downturn at the same time the housing market downturn occurs, so there may be no historical pattern or precedent that you could cite.
Very little in terms of combination. I mean, I hate to be a Debbie Downer here, but when you consider the magnitude of the house price declines, I mean, we're, even within the housing market, it's one of the strongest declines in house prices that we've seen since we've historically tracked this.
And that's, on average, hitting 40% now?
In some markets, you're looking at, price declines from peak of 40%. We look at a national average house price depreciation rate now running around 11%. These kinds of numbers are nationally rivaling what we used to consider as local market stress scenarios in the past. I mean, the classic mortgage stress test that we used to apply was, what if the entire United States housing market experienced the housing price declines of the early 90s Southern California or the 80s oil patch in Texas?
Mm-hmm.
And, laughingly thinking there was no way that that would happen nationally. Well, it's now happening nationally and therefore in a higher magnitude in some markets, places like the bedroom communities of San Francisco and Southern California and Florida.
Mark Fleming, nice to meet you. Thanks for your commentary today. Mark is the chief economist at First American CoreLogic. Nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, Jerry Torres from Mountain House, California will join us. And I know you'd like some good news, but here's what I've got. The Dow dropped another 427 points today, settling below 8,000 for the first time since 2003. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Man, I'm happy to be here. I am happy to be part of the Will the Species Survive environmental show, because I am a very environmental guy. I'm a vegetarian. I buy most of my clothing at secondhand, funky thrift stores. I buy my dogs are from animal shelter. And 2 years ago, I married a divorced woman, so even my wife. Yes, absolutely true. My wife is... 100% secondhand, my wife. You know how... Exactly right. Because you know how much water and gasoline and oil goes into a new wife? You know how much? Just completely immune to disappointment, so it's going to work out real good. Really working out just right.
That's Johnny Steele.
From planetcruise.org.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Come listen to the new Jennifer Cruz Show, Saturdays at noon, where we will get into it, I-N-T-U-I-T. We'll talk about intuition, emotions, and passions, all the invisible aspects of each and every one of us that nobody talks about. The Jennifer Cruz Show is made possible by Weiland Galleries in Carmel and Water Me Well Inner Healing Apparel. Visit watermewell.com. See you Saturdays at noon on the new Jennifer Cruz Show. Remember, Saturdays at noon, only on AM 540. Get into it.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I remain your humble host, Peter B. You can drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, humblehost@peterbcollins.com. It'll reach me. Jerry Torres joins us now. He is the administrator in Mountain House Community Services District. This is the area we're talking about that First American CoreLogic reported is the number one troubled housing community in the country. And, Jerry, that's a distinction nobody wants to earn. Welcome to our program today.
Actually, just a small correction. I'm actually the neighborhood administrator
Okay.
of the Mountain House Community Services District. I'm not the general manager, so I'm one of his management staff.
Okay, and describe the entity, because it's not a municipality in the traditional sense. Is that right?
That's correct. We're not a municipality in the sense of a city. A special district or a community services district is responsible for providing city-like services. So we take care of safety services such as police and fire. We're responsible for water treatment, both wastewater and drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a full-service district. So we cover just about everything.
Now, this is a fairly new community, right?
That's correct. Construction ground was broken for the Mountain House community in 2000,
uh-huh.
with first houses being moved into in 2002.
Okay.
So Mountain House really grew up during the real estate boom here in Northern California.
And how many families live there now?
Well, we have presently about 2,900 completed homes.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that's probably one of my quibbles with the numbers reported in the New York Times story. You know, Mr. Fleming's numbers were for 1,856 mortgages. Well, we actually have 2,900 completed homes. So we're missing roughly 1,000 homes that there's no data on.
I see. And,
so
some of those could have been people who paid cash and don't owe anything on them.
That's entirely possible. And
mm-hmm.
if that's the case, then we're talking about a larger denominator for that numerator of 1,856 mortgages. So we probably aren't anywhere near 90% of homes underwater.
So you're not number one and you're happy about it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the way we look at it, you know, here at the Services District, obviously, you know, our job here is to provide service to the residents of Mountain House. And so as long as the revenue is there to do that, you know, residents here at Mountain House are content with the services that we've been providing.
And where do you get your revenue for the Services District? Is this from redevelopment funds or what?
No, developers don't fund any of the services for Mountain House. We're a tax-based funding just like any other municipality. We receive a portion of ad valorem taxes, which are property taxes, from the county, from San Joaquin County. But then Mountain House was also very conservative when the district was set up, in that we created four special taxes for services that we knew we would not want to be dependent solely on property tax.
Yeah.
So we have special taxes for safety services, for landscaping and lighting, for park and rec, and for roads.
Mm-hmm.
So those are paid in addition to property taxes.
Any plans to change the name of Prosperity Street?
No. No, there will be no changes to street names.
And so tell me how you respond, because, you know, one of the biggest issues about foreclosures and the loss of homes is that, number one, it hurts the comparable values of the home next door. Number two, when you have a vacant house, meth people move in, homeless people, drifters, and a house where the lawn isn't taken care of is an obvious place for squatters or other people who want to steal the copper, for example.
Right.
So what are you doing to preserve the value of the community as individual homeowners often lose their properties?
Well, Mountain House has, we're a little unique in that we have a set of guidelines called master restrictions. They're like covenants and restrictions that homeowners associations have, say, in condominium complexes. So Mountain House actually has that citywide, and so we do master restriction enforcement. We are out there looking specifically for, you know, brown lawns and that sort of thing, because that's a cue to us that there's something wrong. You know, and there's a correction process and a correction procedure that we use for those addresses. We do go after, you know, if a house has gone into foreclosure and the bank owns it, they're the owner. So they become then responsible for the upkeep of the property. So we do go after the banks.
Mm-hmm.
We do go after them to collect, you know, the water payments, you know, so they keep the water on.
Yeah.
To make sure that lawns stay green. You know, we go after them to make sure that the lawns are being kept up. And
are you able to get through to the banks? Because a lot of people I know, for example, there's some people across the street from me who rent a house, and the investors lost the house to the bank. And it's been a year now, and no one has contacted them to give them an address to mail their rent checks to, and they fear that they could be evicted any day.
Gotcha. You know, for us, you know, since Mountain House is a smaller community, it, you know, again, we're only at about 2,900 homes, it is a little easier for us to police that sort of thing. You know, public records are a great resource, you know, where we are able to track down, you know, who actually owns the property, which bank is the owner of the property. You know, so we use those databases in order to find who it is that owns the property, so then we can then try to get them to correct the situation before it becomes, you know, we try to prevent what police officers call the broken window theory, you know, meaning that if a broken window exists, it isn't long before greater crime follows that broken window.
We're talking with Jerry Torres, and Mountain House, California. Now, Jerry, what about the obvious factor here that when mortgages are going up, people have less disposable income? And so the New York Times reported that a business called Cribs Kids and Teens had businesses down 50%. And at other retail operations in Mountain House, people are having similar problems. Do you have a sense that they can hold out long enough for a recovery?
Or do you think that this is just
going to continue to spiral down?
Well, to be honest with you, this is the problem with having an Eastern newspaper doing a report on a Western community. Mountain House is really a live-only community right now. There is no retail here in Mountain House, with the exception of a small little market, you know, that's sort of like an AM/PM market.
Oh, I see.
And a dentist's office.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not going out of business. She's doing pretty well. So, you know, the strip mall that they're talking about actually is probably the closest retail location to Mountain House, and it's actually in the neighboring city of Tracy.
Oh,
and
okay.
Tracy is a city of 90,000 folks. You know, they have their own, you know, issues, of course, because they were a fast-growing community as well, although they had a proposition that passed Measure A several years back. So they started restricting building in Tracy to about 100 permits a year several years ago. So, you know, Tracy, I think some of Tracy's issues have more to do with the fact that they're not growing, and so they're not adding revenue. But at the same time, their costs of providing services are going up.
Mm-hmm.
So the loss of tax revenue, the loss of property tax revenue, I think that's what's really impacted Tracy, and in particular the businesses in Tracy, because, of course, you know, as times get more difficult, people tighten their belts, they shop, you know, they shop for disposable items mm-hmm. less, that sort of thing. And so, yeah. you know, those businesses don't rely on Mountain House for shoppers. You know, I mean, we have probably about 8,000 residents here.
And Jerry, just briefly, about 20 seconds here, has sure. anybody recently purchased a home in Mountain House?
Actually, yes. We've had lots of homes sell, and in fact, because of all of the publicity that we've had recently, we've had the lots at the home builders' locations, their models have been full.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we've been selling homes.
All right. Well, Jerry, thank you for updating us and
sure.
correcting the errors of that Eastern media outlet, okay?
Okay.
Good to talk with you. Jerry Torres, Community Administrator, Mountain House Community in California. We'll take a break and return with Phyllis Bennis on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy 2 bottles, you get 1 bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Dow goes down, lowest levels in 5 years.
We've had 3 up days in the last 10.
Latest government report doesn't sound like things are going to get better soon.
Fed paints gloomy economic picture. I'm Barry Bagnato in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Jim Taylor. The Dow dropping 427 points, falling below 8,000, which hasn't happened since 2003. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
The three major indexes are now at their lowest level in about 5 years, and there's very little incentive right now for people to jump into this market. Trading volume has been quite low now for weeks, and there isn't any compelling reason to buy stocks right now.
Market analyst Art Hogan.
It's clearly a pattern that we've gotten used to in terms of the magnitude of the volatility. It's unprecedented.
On Wall Street, it is sell, sell, sell.
Every rally has been nothing but a selling opportunity.
Teddy Weisberg's seen a lot of ups and downs in his 40-plus years on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. What he's seeing now?
We're in a very negative environment with very little investor confidence and not a whole lot to be feel positive about.
Very bleak report from the Federal Reserve today. CBS's Barry Bagnato.
About the only positive paragraph in the report, a strong suggestion the Fed will lower interest rates further. When monetary policymakers consider rate moves, they always take inflation into account. Lowering rates too far can push prices upward. Right now, though, no such worries, with the latest government report showing the steepest drop in consumer prices since 1947, when the government started officially tracking them.
One thing recessions are good at is cutting the inflation rate. This one's doing its job.
David Weiss, chief economist at Standard & Poor's. Why are prices coming down?
Partially lower import costs. Partially stores are getting afraid that they're not going to sell off all that Christmas merchandise, and discounting is starting early.
CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy.
It's classic supply and demand. Too many products and not enough consumers to buy them. People basically are shutting their wallets because they're feeling the pinch, and when they do that, prices drop.
Now this.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
When shopping for holiday gadgets, some search engines get you lost in all the links, but not Yahoo Search. To prove it, we switched Mark's Google page with Yahoo and brought a mall Santa along for the ride.
Ho, ho, ho!
Man, I'm sick of mall Santas.
Ho.
You'll never get tired of how Yahoo Search helps you shop. Type a gift like digital camera.
Hey, there's popular brands, ratings, buyer's guides, all at the top of the page.
It's a miracle on... what street are we on?
Switch to Yahoo Search and get straight to your answers. Start now at Yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
New housing construction down another 4.5% last month for new housing. Lowest level since figures started being kept 50 years ago. David Crow, National Association of Home Builders.
There is no question the consumer is up against a lot of hurdles. They're facing the question of whether the house prices are at their lowest level. They're facing increased restrictions on borrowing.
Builders aren't building. Buyers can't buy. Economist Diane Swonk.
People can't get credit that they once did, and even qualified borrowers are having a hard time buying homes out of foreclosure or empty homes that are sitting on home builder lots.
After another day of the big three American automakers pleading for money in Washington, GM CEO Rick Wagner.
If the domestic industry were allowed to fail, the societal cost would be catastrophic.
But Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says there will be no bailout vote this week. Economist Peter Morici.
My feeling is that if we give them $25 billion now, the federal government will have to give them additional monies in the future. The Detroit Three will be back over and over again. It will be in for a penny and in for a pound.
Some perspective on Detroit's fall in this report from CBS's Steve Kathan on the value of the product made there.
Is the car you climb into holding its value?
They said no one would make a car with an electrical motor.
Toyota, thanks to the Prius, retains nearly 43% of its value. Honda, 44%, according to the Kelley Blue Book. In its new top 10, not a single American nameplate.
Chrysler, inspiration comes standard.
Chrysler holds just 24% of its original cost. GM and Ford, around 30%. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
California State Supreme Court agreeing to hear three challenges to Proposition 8, the same-sex marriage ban. At the same time, the court rules same-sex marriages cannot take place while it's considering those challenges. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
When my baby left for college, I took some classes of my own.
Left, right, turn.
Dance classes. That's when I started needing a pain reliever for my sore leg. Then I upgraded my computer and had to get a headache medicine, too. For every new pain, I had a different pain reliever. But now I'm all Advil. It's my every pain reliever. Advil works wherever I hurt. And nothing's proven stronger on tough pain than Advil. I'm all Advil. Are you all Advil?
Use as directed compared to OTC pain relievers.
Al-Qaeda's number two speaks up.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining me this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show, and welcome to our weekend listeners on Green 960 in San Francisco.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world as one, and I believe it could be. Someday it's going to come. And now, on the edge of darkness, there rises a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country.
There goes Cat Stevens. He's on the no-fly list now because he's a Muslim.
The things to come, and I believe it could be something good has been.
This hour, we're going to talk about peace and war. A lot of times it's phrased the other way around. But peace is the objective as we discuss conflicts around the world that the U.S. is either directly or indirectly involved with. Phyllis Bennis joins us this hour. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington and at the Transnational Institute in Amsterdam. And she's been busy at her typewriter publishing three primers. One, understanding the U.S.-Iran crisis. Number two, ending the Iraq War. And number three, understanding the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Phyllis, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Peter. Great to be with you.
Well, I always enjoy talking with you, and I appreciate the progressive views that you bring to discussions of foreign policy. And I'm always cheering for you when they invite you on the PBS NewsHour, and I think you're overdue for a visit there.
I think I am, actually. I haven't been on there for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe you should give them a call and remind them.
Okay, I will. Now, first of all, just the overview. What was your idea in publishing these three primers? They're $10 each. They're soft cover. They fit in a suit coat pocket or a purse. And I think it's a great way to get information to people.
Well, you know, I did the first one a couple years ago, the Israel-Palestine one, I guess about a year and a half. And both Iran and Iraq came out in the last month or so. And I'm just working now with a colleague on Afghanistan, actually.
Yeah, we need that.
I'm afraid so. I'm afraid we're going to need that one rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was that these are issues that people, in some cases, have very strongly held feelings about, but often don't really have a lot of information. And that goes on all sides, really, whether it's on Israel-Palestine, whether it's, you know, a lot of anti-war activists who are passionate and work incredibly hard to try and end the war in Iraq, but don't necessarily really have the facts they need, or at least not in an easily accessible form, to figure out how to talk to people who don't already agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what these books are for. It's both for people who are kind of new to the issues, but also for people who are looking for good ways to talk about it in a simple way. So each of them is set up as frequently asked questions.
Well, and Phyllis, I think you're also trying to fill the void because the corporate media in this country doesn't deliver us the information that we need to know. The major networks don't even have full staffs in Iraq anymore. They rely on news packages from the Pentagon and
right.
freelance reporters or non-American networks to supply information when news breaks, but they're not doing any enterprise reporting. They don't have people covering beats there to try to unearth news about, you know, all kinds of things, good or bad.
But, you know, that's certainly true, Peter, but I also think, you know, I think media criticism is a little more complicated than we sometimes think it is. I mean, the criticisms are all exactly on the money about what the corporate media leaves out, what they don't do, what the consequences are of closing down bureaus and, you know, the fact that newspapers are shutting down altogether and laying off huge parts of their staff because they can't, you know, they can't make a profit anymore. That's a huge set of problems. But there's another set of problems that we can do something about more directly, and that is the question of history. You know, and that means fighting to reclaim the curriculum control of our schools, fighting with for ourselves to read more, to read books and not just read the Internet. You know, I think some of it, there are answers to getting this kind of information. A colleague of mine the other day said, you know, I think we have to be rethinking our emphasis. We write a lot of books at my office.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, I think we really should rethink that. Nobody reads books these days. We're really the post-literate society. And I remember hearing that and saying, oh, my God, is he serious? And then I realized, of course he's serious, and he's to a large degree right. And then I thought, we have to do something about that. We can't just sit back and let that happen.
Well, I mean, the decline of print media is a very serious problem, and we know that for many young people, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert on Comedy Central are primary sources of information delivered in a satiric format.
Right, and I've got to say, I'm a huge fan of both of them.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm hopeful that that's not the only place where I go to get my news.
Sure, it's supplemental for me. It's entertainment, but
exactly.
I do appreciate that it's often fact-based and that people do pick up those facts. But
right, and that's great. That's fabulous. And I think we should all make the most of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think we should write books, and people should read books, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that makes me old-fashioned.
Now, have you sent copies of these three primers to the Obama transition team?
You know, I haven't. And I guess that's something I should figure out how to do. The problem that we still have is we don't really know who are the key people and how to get to them in the transition team. I mean, we know who a few of them are, and they're the ones that I know about. I'm pretty sure are not going to be very interested in these. but I think there might be some others who might be.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, we're going to have kind of a mix of people in there, I think. And I think those are the ones we don't know who they are yet.
Yeah.
So
well, let's
look forward to.
Let's take a moment here and talk about Iran. In the next segment, I'd like to talk about Iraq. And then in our second half hour, we're going to be joined by Paul LaRudy from the Free Gaza Movement. And, of course, there have been setbacks in the efforts to find some consensus and stop the fighting in the Palestinian-occupied territories. And also the Free Gaza Movement has now conducted three flotillas from Cyprus to Gaza, challenging the Israeli blockade. And Paul LaRudy was on the first of those missions in August. So he'll be joining us in a bit.
I hope we can also talk about Afghanistan at some point in there.
Well,
that's the rising one.
I agree. And that's something my listeners hear about almost every day, because I think it's very critical to think critically about the situation in Afghanistan. So let's go ahead and do it right now.
Okay.
I think that I have been critical of Barack Obama for articulating properly that we need to get out of Iraq, and then almost flippantly saying, well, we've got to put more troops into Afghanistan. I understand that we haven't paid attention there, and that Bush and his team have failed miserably in dealing with that situation. I just don't think that the prescription of more troops is the most effective way to deal with it, and I think we need to have a clear plan, a full debate, before we make a fateful decision to engage in another huge occupation.
I think you're absolutely right, Peter. I wish there were more commentators believing that and saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're one of very few. Unfortunately, we're stuck in this mindset where an awful lot of people are still kind of believing that Afghanistan is the, quote, good war.
Yeah.
And that's what has made it possible for Obama to maintain his positioning as an anti-war candidate while calling for a massive escalation in Afghanistan. And it's made it very difficult for parts of the peace movement, although I think that is changing. I think more and more people are coming to recognize at least the consequence side of things. Even for folks who may still disagree about the origins of the war, a lot of people still think it was a legitimate war, a legal war. Perhaps it was self-defense. Perhaps it was vengeance. I don't happen to think that any of those provide legitimacy. I don't think it was a legal war. I don't think it was a legitimate war. But I don't think you have to necessarily agree on all those things to agree that war is not going to work in Afghanistan. This idea that you can stamp out terrorism by killing a lot of people, mainly civilians, and that somehow if in there you manage to get one or two of the people you're aiming at, you kill one or two of the top terrorists, that somehow they're not going to expand even further because of the horror and the anger of people who watch a whole generation of civilians being targeted and being attacked. So the notion, I mean, people talk about how we have to win hearts and minds in Afghanistan. And I agree with that. I mean, I think but the question is, win those hearts and minds away from what and towards what?
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing on the ground, despite all the talk about winning hearts and minds, is we're losing hearts and minds. We're sending hearts and minds directly to the Taliban. We're sending them every time there's an airstrike that's aiming at one person and ends up hitting a wedding party and killing 70.
Yeah.
Somehow wedding parties have become the leitmotif of U.S. Policy in Afghanistan. Over and over again, we keep hearing about wedding parties that are attacked. 5 people killed, 70 people killed, 30 people killed. And the word of this spreads throughout the country, and the level of antagonism is skyrocketing, and that's when people begin to return to the Taliban, seeing them as the one force that might be able to get rid of the hated occupier.
And Phyllis, what this underscores, and I frame it in this sense, is I'm opposed to occupation. And the occupation of the Palestinian territories does not work. Britain's occupation of Northern Ireland did not work. Our occupation of Iraq is a mess. And the idea of expanding an occupation in Afghanistan makes no sense to me.
For anyone who knows anything about history, knows about the British attempt in Afghanistan, the Soviet attempts in Afghanistan, going back in history to the Mongols, no one ever succeeded in occupying and pacifying Afghanistan. This is a very independent country, very conscious of national identity, and occupation is really not on their agenda.
We're talking with Phyllis Bennis. Time for a break, Phyllis. We'll return in just a moment. She has published three little books with a lot of big information: Ending the War in Iraq, Understanding the U.S.-Iran Crisis, and Understanding the Palestinian-Israeli Conflict. They're $10 each in softcover, and they're from Interlink Publishing. Actually, the Olive Branch Press is the imprint, and you can find them at your local independent bookstore or maybe even one of the big chains, too. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, toll-free at 86... that's the other number. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. I never call, so you understand.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Thea Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. We've got a lot happening right now. There's a collision on Orchard Lane just east of northbound 101. Next, on 17 Mile Drive at Crespi Lane, there was a two-vehicle collision. We also have a two-car collision on Spyglass Hill Road at Stevenson Drive. Moving up to Santa Cruz, on Highway 1 just north of Cement Plant Road, there is a traffic hazard. Also, on northbound Highway 1 just south of Morrissey Boulevard, there are two large bags of trash in Lane 2. Taking a look at Walty Street at Laurel Street, we've got a collision involving a school bus. CHP is on the way there. On Highway 1 at Ocean Street, we have some slow and diverted traffic. Northbound lanes are currently closed. Southbound lanes are being used for northbound traffic. That's traffic on AM 540. Have a great afternoon. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
Right on.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you to cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we've got to find.
We're talking with Phyllis Bennis here on the Peter B. Collins Show, a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the author of three, with a fourth coming about Afghanistan, three primers about important conflicts that the U.S. has a role in, Palestinian, Israeli, Iran, and Iraq. And Phyllis, about Iraq, we do know the intention of Barack Obama, and it's now buttressed by the agreement that may get stabilized with the U.S. and Iraq around exit by the end of 2011. But for me, Obama's been frustratingly unspecific about exactly when the last American soldier would leave Iraq. Do you think that that's going to become more clear in the coming months?
Well, at some point it's going to have to become more clear. But I'm afraid, I share your frustration, Peter, and I'm afraid it's not going to become clear anytime soon. Unfortunately, the agreement that is under discussion right now at the Iraqi parliament, some version of it was signed off by the U.S. and the Iraqi government. The problem is we don't really know what it says. There is a version that's circulating around. But some of the questions remain because it's not clear that the White House has not released a text of the agreement. And frankly, until they do, until the White House says this is what we signed, I don't really buy it. So one of the big questions, for example, Article 24, which is a withdrawal section, says that all combat troops will be withdrawn from out of the cities and to their bases by the end of June of next year, June of 2009.
Right.
That's been in pretty much all the drafts for a while, so we can pretty much be sure that was in the agreement. But the first part of it says that all U.S. troops will be out of all Iraqi territory by the end of, well, by December 31st of 2011. Now, the problem is it's not so clear that it actually says all troops.
Mm-hmm.
An earlier version said U.S. troops. Others have said that it's linked to the combat troops. Barack Obama's position, although his language has been, I will end the war.
Right.
And that, of course, is what made him a viable leading candidate so early in the election, in the primary process, was saying, I will end the war. But his actual strategy, when you read the fine print, is to partially withdraw troops. He will withdraw combat troops,
Right. Leaving
behind somewhere between 50 and 80,000 additional U.S. troops.
And some estimates are they'll be there for a five-year period beyond 2011.
Exactly. We simply don't know, and it's not at all clear. I was on Al Jazeera yesterday morning with the spokesman for the Iraqi government, Ali Debba, and I said that one of the problems that we had in talking about this is that we don't know what it says. We don't know if it's all troops, some troops, combat troops, or just troops. And he didn't answer. So, you know, it makes me very nervous, let's put it that way, that we can't get a straight story.
Well, the other thing that concerns me is that The Iraqis are actually operating in somewhat of a democratic fashion. It was approved by the cabinet. It was signed by a foreign minister with our ambassador, and it's going to be submitted to the parliament for ratification.
Than we're doing in this country.
Right. We're not even considering submitting this to the Senate or any other advisory panel. It's being done by fiat by Bush's ambassador.
This is a huge problem. I mean, this has been an issue. Bush has said from the beginning that he does not believe he is obligated to bring this agreement to the Senate for ratification. Of course, according to the U.S. Constitution, all treaties are subject to being ratified by the Constitution.
By the Senate.
Bush administration posture is, this isn't a treaty, this is just a regular old status of forces agreement like we have in countries all around the world, and they never have to have Senate agreement. The difference here, of course, is that we're not talking about the status of forces agreement of, you know, how many U.S. troops are going to be in Japan. We're talking about a war. We're talking about U.S. troops that are fighting a war in Iraq. And the notion that you can just sort of put that aside and go ahead with this without any kind of ratification. On the other hand, of course, that gives Barack Obama even more flexibility.
Right. The other gray area here is nobody has pinned Obama down about when the contractors will come home or at least leave Iraq.
Exactly. And that's another thing that remains very obscure.
Yeah.
The demands of the peace movement have not changed. For 6-7 years, well, at least since, I guess, 5 years since most of the contractors arrived, mm-hmm. the demands have been, end the occupation. That means bring home, not send to Afghanistan, bring home.
More with Phyllis Bennis in a moment. We got to take a break. Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
We need a few fresh ideas, people. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The big three car companies stood before Congress with their cardboard signs and explained to the senators that they were new in town and needed $25 billion for a bus ticket home. Senator Bob Corker asked the question that you or I would ask in a similar situation.
And would y'all make the pledge that if you get the $25 billion, you'll never be back?
This is what it's come to. So I asked listeners for their bailout ideas, and here they are. Number one, car companies go to their customers with the following offer. You pay us $5,000 now, and we give you a voucher worth $10,000 towards the car of your choice in 3 years. Number two, make the full price of any American car tax deductible. That might blow an even bigger hole in the federal budget, but who counts the holes in a piece of Swiss cheese? But here's one I really like. Let the oil companies bail them out. The big three oil companies made close to $90 billion in total profits last year, more than three times what the auto companies need, and it was their cars that generated the profit. Why shouldn't they get that money? It sounds crazy, I know, but why not? I mean, it's so bad, there was a group of ministers praying outside the Treasury building yesterday.
Yes. We pray that you yes. have pierced the veil of Secretary Paulson. Yes.
I am told there is one consumer business that is still prospering despite all this, sales of assault weapons, for fear that the Obama administration will ban them come January. Hey, now, there's an idea. Have the president-elect announce that he's not going to touch anybody's gun, but plans to ban the Chevy Impala. That could do it. Now this.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you can be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
This is Dave Ross, out of the CBS Radio Network.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
All right, Carlos, now you can hit it. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and staying with us is Phyllis Bennis, a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, as we mentioned. She's the author of three primers that have been published and a fourth that's on the way. The three that are out now are about the U.S.-Iran crisis, ending the Iraq War, and understanding the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Also joining us is Paul LaRudy, who's been on our program many times over the last few months. He is a Bay Area activist and part of the Free Gaza movement. And if you go to their website, freegaza.org, you can get more information on the boat lifts, the flotillas, that they have sponsored. Now, three crossings from Cyprus to Gaza in defiance of the Israeli blockade. Paul, good to talk with you again.
Good to be with you and with Phyllis.
And I just want to say that it's sad that since you made that historic crossing at some personal risk in August, that the conflict has re-erupted between Israel and the Palestinians, and there has been a number of raids and deaths, and rocket fire has started back up from the Palestinian territories, and so it's a dicey situation right now. What can you tell us about the current situation and how people are bearing up in Gaza under the current ratcheting up of tensions?
Well, it's not only a ratcheting up of tensions. It's a ratcheting up of essentially the siege itself by cutting off everything, fuel, medicine, electricity, food, everything. I mean, there were 30 trucks that went in, I guess it was either earlier today or yesterday. But that's just a tiny drop in the bucket. And furthermore, it makes no sense. It's not harming Hamas. It's doing nothing to the combatants there. It's a crime, under international law to harm civilians, especially this of such a large number of civilians, it's affecting the entire population of 1.5 million people, more than half of whom are children. And it reminds the one of nothing so much as the initial stages of the Warsaw Ghetto itself, in the surrounding of Gaza with a wall and the cutting off of all services and supplies.
Well, and Phyllis Bennis, Gaza is sadly a large prison camp, and Israel is back in the mode of a kind of collective punishment, that because some individuals have challenged the Israeli occupation, and some have done it in a violent manner, that they're going to punish everyone who lives there.
You know, I think it's important, Peter, that we recognize that while there may well have been violations in part of the resistance, some of the military resistance has in fact violated international law, that does not give Israel, the occupying power, the right to impose this kind of collective punishment. But the other thing that's important to recognize is that this collective punishment began long before any rockets were sent. The punishment of the people of Gaza, turning it into a giant prison, as you just said, Peter, began when Hamas was elected. They were elected largely because people were very tired of the corruption and failure of the long-standing leading Palestinian organization, Fatah. Mm-hmm. And when the election came about, an election that the Palestinians themselves said they didn't want to hold, but the U.S. insisted on having them then.
Correct.
That Hamas won. And it was in response to that electoral victory, not in response to anything violent, that this squeezing of Gaza began, that's now gotten to such horrific proportions. Just 2 days ago, the International Committee of the Red Cross, a major report was leaked indicating that malnutrition is now widespread in Gaza, something that with all of the deprivation of refugee camps in Gaza, that was never a problem. That is now a problem. The hospitals can't function because the electricity keeps going out. You know, the work that Paul and the others with the Free Gaza Movement have done has been huge in bringing a little bit of a spotlight to this horrific situation, because one of the worst parts of this, it's not just the humanitarian catastrophe that's going on, but the success to a very large degree of Israel in keeping it hidden. There is a huge campaign by the Israeli government, by the Israeli occupation authorities, to keep Palestinian witnesses who might be able to tell the world about the condition inside, penned in Gaza, and keep everybody else outside, keep people from going in. So one of the parts of the tightened blockade that we saw just in the last few days has been the complete exclusion of all foreign journalists. That's why the work of the Free Gaza Movement really needs to be congratulated, because they brought journalists with them.
Yes,
well, Phyllis, we're trying
what
to
what the Israelis
that.
Do not want them to see. The treatment of Mohammed Omer, a young Palestinian journalist, the youngest to ever receive the very prestigious British award, the Martha Gellhorn Award, for courageous journalism in wartime. He was, after months, finally allowed out to go to London to receive his award, traveled around in Europe for several weeks, and when he returned in June, he was going back to Gaza via the West Bank, going in through Jordan over the bridge, accompanied by a Dutch diplomat who took him through the Jordanian side, but for unknown reasons was not with him when he actually went through to the Israeli side, at which point he was grabbed, beaten unconscious, woken up with a boot on his neck, blacked out again, woke up again in an ambulance headed for Jericho, and it took then another 3 months. He was finally just released about 2 weeks ago to leave Gaza for much-needed medical treatment as a result of the injuries that he suffered. And the significance of his case is not just that it's one more horrific attack on a Palestinian individual, but because it's part of a campaign to keep the journalists from doing their job, part of a campaign to keep the world unaware of what's going on inside Gaza. And that's the importance of talking about it, of people going, of bringing back the news.
Paula Rudy, go ahead.
Well, one of the things that we've been trying to do, some of our people stayed with the International Solidarity Movement in Rafah, which has been reconstituted because we've been able to bring some people in by sea. And as a result of that, there has been more attention brought to the plight of the fishermen in Gaza, who are in a situation where they can supply needed food and protein from the resource of Gaza itself to the Palestinians in Gaza, but they're not permitted to do that by the Israeli authorities. And they're not permitted, the Israeli authorities are not even permitting them into their own waters to fish as guaranteed by the Oslo agreement, which itself is no longer in force.
Hmm.
So because of the attention that was brought to the fishermen, or for whatever reason they have, they abducted 15 fishermen and three of our people who were delivered, who were with ISM in Rafah, and arrested them and took their boats into Israel. Now there's this incredible spectacle of Israel saying that they should be deported because they entered Israel unlawfully. And the only way they entered Israel is because the Israeli Navy abducted them and took them from Gaza to Israel.
Oh, that's worse than a Catch-22. I mean, that's just a setup.
Yes, it is. But the importance of the work they were doing there was to draw attention, to draw world attention to what was happening to the fishermen whose boats were being battered by water cannons, sometimes loaded with what's known as the skunk, which is an Israeli invented odoriferous chemical that permeates everything.
It's a stink bomb.
It's a stink bomb. Yeah, and they're using these tactics. Every time the fishermen try to go to the waters to which they're entitled, and to stop them from catching fish. This
and Paul, tell us a little bit more, because you just alluded to one of the more than symbolic impacts of your boat lifts, your flotillas from Cyprus. What else with these three expeditions that have successfully reached Gaza? What have been the other impacts that are tangible beyond this symbolic challenge to the Israeli blockade?
Well, of course, we have taken in hearing aids, which were banned from what was permitted by the Israelis into Gaza for 2 years. Hearing aids, for God's sake, for children.
And do they think they can be used for explosive devices or what? What's the reason to ban a hearing aid?
They don't have to provide a reason. All they have to do is to say this is not permitted. Only essentials are permitted, and perhaps they think that hearing aids are not essential. Parliamentarians, there were something like, I think it was 52 parliamentarians who were scheduled to enter Gaza through Egypt. And then Egypt prevented them from going in. And so 11 of them decided that they would use this alternate service that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And they became our third voyage to Gaza. So they got there. When they got there, they met with the leadership in Gaza, who promptly announced once again, and this can only get world attention when you have people like these parliamentarians going in there, that they were ready to have lasting peace with Israel on the basis of forming a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza. This is not the first time they've done that, but they got some attention because the parliamentarians were there. So, I mean, we played a role in that. And we would be willing to take, for example, the journalists who have been forbidden to enter Gaza. But you can see what the Israelis are doing now in trying to prevent this from happening. They abducted our three people because they were among the most active with the fishermen and got the most attention internationally to the plight of the fishermen.
And Phyllis Bennis, as you hear these stories from Paul LaRudy and the Free Gaza effort, how do you think progressives can try to persuade the Obama administration to really take a new plan, turn the page, as Obama was saying during the campaign, to a much more balanced approach to this conflict?
You know, this is one of the most difficult issues that we're going to face, because on the one hand, it's one of the most urgent. The demands internationally are very intense on Obama to move quickly on Israel-Palestine. But it's from a very unnerving vantage point that essentially says the problem with the Bush administration was they were too hands-off. They didn't pay enough attention. They didn't get engaged. They weren't engaged. And that what we need is more engagement. The problem with that analysis is that it implies that the essential basis of the policy is good, and that the problem was it wasn't being implemented actively enough or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's way wrong. I don't think we need more engagement. I think we need completely different engagement, and that's much more difficult. I think it's certainly not going to happen in the first month of Obama's term, of his first term. I think that's clearly not going to be the case. I think the big issues are going to for him quickly are going to be Iraq and the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel-Palestine is going to be on a back burner. Now, is that acceptable? Of course it isn't. But I think it is a reality. I think that one of the things we have to look at is what was it that made the creation of a Free Gaza movement necessary? What was it that made the creation of the international solidarity movement necessary? It was the failure of the international community, the official part of the international community, the United Nations, to provide the kind of protection for an occupied, protected population like the Palestinians. It was the failure of the rest of the world government to do it because the U.S. wouldn't allow it, that these kinds of civil society initiatives become necessary. So we have to keep that in mind in terms of understanding our own obligation.
That's Phyllis Bennis from the Institute for Policy Studies. Among her recent publications, a primer, a paperback that fits in your pocket called Understanding the Palestinian-Israeli Conflict. We'll continue with Phyllis and with Paul LaRudy from the Free Gaza Movement. Go to their website, freegaza.org. More ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now, on southbound 101 at Echo Valley Road, a big rig is currently blocking the right-hand turn lane, so watch out there. On Spyglass Hill Road at Stevenson Drive, we have a two-vehicle collision. Taking a look at Santa Cruz, on Highway 1 at Ocean Street, the northbound lanes are still closed, and northbound traffic is being diverted onto the southbound lane. On Soquel Drive at Porter Street, we have a traffic collision with no injuries. Moving over to the Hollister-Gilroy area, on northbound 101, just north of eastbound Highway 152, we have a traffic collision with an ambulance responding. There was a two-vehicle collision on Fairview Road at Hillcrest Road. That's traffic on AM 540. Have a safe commute and stay tuned to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting Sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, open systems architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, discussing the possible appointment of Senator Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. On MSNBC, Vanity Fair's Christopher Hitchens said of Clinton,
"It's only true that she's respected in the Pentagon if people go around saying so. I'd never heard that before, I must say."
In fact, media outlets have previously reported that Clinton has, quote, gained a lot of respect among military leadership and has built relationships with military leaders such as General David Petraeus and Admiral William Fallon. But today's most ridiculous comment goes to MSNBC's Joe Scarborough, claiming that Al Franken is poised to, quote, steal votes in the Minnesota State Senate race.
Recapping, if Al Franken can steal enough votes in Minnesota, that gets Democrats to 59.
That's right.
And then Saxman Chambliss loses in the special runoff, Democrats get 60. Wow. Filibuster-proof majority.
However, Minnesota Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty has repeatedly said that there is no actual evidence of fraud in the vote count of the U.S. State Senate race. For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour. We're talking about the Israel-Palestine conflict with Phyllis Bennis from the Institute of Policy Studies. And one more time, I'll mention her primer, a lot of powerful information in a small book, Understanding the Palestinian-Israeli Conflict, out in softcover, $10 from Olive Branch Press. And also with us is Paul LaRudy from the Free Gaza Movement, freegaza.org. And, Paul, I just want to take a second here to help our listeners understand the indignities that Palestinians face, even when they're not on a full lockdown, that they have to use separate roads. The Israelis have really nice roads, and the Palestinians go down potholed, dirt roads in some cases. They have checkpoints that they have to pass through often to go to work, and they may be delayed or detained there for 20 minutes or all day long. And the other restrictions that they face because of the Israeli settlements, the walls, and other barriers that have been created, it makes life very difficult. And then when Israel chokes off the money supply, tax money that Israel collects for the Palestinians, and they arbitrarily decide when to disperse it or administer it, these plus the lockdown and the blockade of food supplies, what you described of fishermen who were not only unable to fish, but essentially kidnapped by Israelis and then charged with crossing over into Israeli territory. I mean, this adds up to an incredible burden on the population in the Palestinian territories.
Well, of course, that's the intention, to place as much burden as possible on the Palestinians, to create as much misery and suffering as possible, so as to marginalize them and make them disappear if possible, to move away, to damage their society and to marginalize them. You were saying before the break, or Phyllis was, about the role of civil society. And, of course, we all know the expression, where the people lead, the leaders will follow. And that's what I see as the role of civil society in this case. It's been 60 years that governments have been ineffective in dealing with this, or worse. It requires initiatives from our part. In this particular case, for example, if there are people, if there are listeners who want to get involved in this, one thing that can be done right now is there are three internationals with the International Solidarity Movement who have been abducted, taken into Israel, and 15 Palestinian fishermen as well, although they were released early this morning. But their boats are still being held captive. But these three internationals are there. They were doing nothing except helping and working with the fishermen, and now they're in front of Israeli courts, and they're in jail in Israel when they didn't even enter Israel under their own voluntarily.
Yeah.
What people can do now in order to put pressure is to call the Israeli embassy and the prison in Israel and U.S. representatives, and one of them is a U.S. citizen from San Jose, California. Another is Italian, and the third is Scottish. So
and then the name of the person from San Jose?
That would be Darlene Wallach.
Okay.
Her twin sister Donna is still in Gaza, working with the fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go to our website, find out all the information with the phone numbers to where to call and to send emails and faxes and who to contact. It's all there. Everybody can participate in this. And this is, by the way, I mean, it was Obama himself who said, send me emails and I need your help in order to get things done. Well, mm-hmm. this is how we push our own government to get involved in the right way on these things by doing these things ourselves.
And the website Paul referred to, freegaza.org. Phyllis Bennis, your comment?
I think what Paul has just said is very, very important. The role of civil society is crucial in all this. And I think it is important to recognize we have made incredible strides in the last few years in changing the discourse. That's what has to happen first. Before the policy is going to change, you know, it's true, the leaders will only follow when they have no other choice. They're not going to do it on their own. And we've made enormous strides. Right now, the U.S. campaign to end Israeli occupation, which is a big coalition of about 260 organizations all across the country, many of them in California, many in the Bay Area, are involved in a two-and-a-half-week, 11-city speaking tour of Diana Bhutu, a very well-known Palestinian lawyer who argued the Palestinian case at the International Court of Justice, and Eddie McHugh, who's the head of the South African Council of Churches. They've been on tour talking about Israeli apartheid. The tour is called Separate is Never Equal, Stories of Apartheid from South Africa and Palestine. And they're having meetings all over the place, on college campuses, in churches, in mosques, in synagogues. They're meeting with the editorial board of the Los Angeles Times. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we never would have been able to pull this off. We never would have had the kind of high-level interest in this issue from this framework. The role of Jimmy Carter's book played a huge role in it.
Mm-hmm.
The role of the Walt Mearsheimer book on the Israeli lobby
right.
played a huge role. All of these things are making it possible for those of us who are working on this, you know, people who want more information also beyond the freegaza.org website. The U.S. campaign website is endtheoccupation.org.
I got to stop there. Phyllis Bennis, thank you very much. Paul LaRudy, keep it up, and we'll find peace at some point in the future. Thank you both.
Thank you, Drew.
Paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Recession. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christopher says it looks like we're in it for a while.
Policymakers now believe this recession is going to last through next summer, and it seems as though every day we're getting more proof that the recession is getting even deeper. We also found out that home construction is not recovering at all. In fact, it is getting even worse, and applications for mortgages are also low, even though mortgage rates have come down a bit.
The Dow dropping 427 points today, leaving the index below 8,000 for the first time in 5 years. The news from the Labor Department, consumer prices plummeting. David Weiss, chief economist for Standard & Poor's.
1% drop in October, that's the biggest in over 60 years. So it was expected. We knew that oil prices were down pretty sharply. The key is, excluding food and energy, prices were also down by a tenth of a percent in October.
Calling all cars, Detroit's CEOs again with their hands out in Washington today.
I'm Tom Foti on Capitol Hill. The heads of the big three car makers and the United Auto Workers were back for a second day of grilling here, this time before members of the House. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger.
In addition to the hundreds of thousands of workers who would directly lose their jobs at the Detroit-based auto companies, a total of almost 3 million workers would see their jobs eliminated.
But mostly Republican opposition in the Senate to what opponents call another bailout leaves the car industry loan issue very much unresolved. Tom Foti, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid now says he is calling off any bailout vote this week. Former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle is being offered the post of Health and Human Services Secretary in the Obama cabinet. And is Hillary Clinton the next Secretary of State? CBS's Chip Reed.
People I've talked to today say she was not specifically clearly given an offer, but she walked out of that room with Barack Obama believing that if she wants the job, she could have it.
Alaska Senator Ted Stevens conceding defeat in his reelection bid against Democrat Mark Begich, the longest-serving Republican in Senate history, convicted on federal corruption charges. CBS News chief political consultant Mark Ambinder.
If Ted Stevens had won and he had pulled this out, it is very likely that the Senate would have voted to remove him anyway. Triggering perhaps another election.
Instead, the Anchorage mayor is elected to the Senate, and the Democrats are one seat closer to being filibuster-proof there. Update on Prop 8, the California measure that bans same-sex marriage there.
The state Supreme Court agreed to hear three challenges to Proposition 8. At the same time, the court ruled same-sex marriages cannot take place while it's considering the challenges. Proposition 8, passed by voters here in California, allows marriages to only take place between a man and a woman. The challenges claim that the proposition limits the civil rights of a minority group. It's likely the court will make its ruling in the middle of next year.
That's Steve Futterman reporting from Los Angeles. This is CBS News.
Truck on the right, no signs in sight, which lane to take, can't make mistake, which way to go, too many roads, exit almost missed, need lane assist, get a Nuvi, change lanes with ease, with lane assist, exits you won't miss, Nuvi knows the road, knows where to go, navigation tool, even saves you fuel,
give a Garmin,
give a Garmin,
Nuvi keeps you sane, ends driving pains, Garmin.com, Garmin.com,
give a Garmin Nuvi with lane assist.
When it comes to restaurants, some search engines get you lost in all the links, but not Yahoo Search. To prove it, we switched Bob's Google page with Yahoo and brought mariachis into his office.
What the?
Now Yahoo Search brings you even more info from sites you trust, like City Search and Sagat.
Try searching a restaurant on your city.
Whoa, those results have photos, ratings, phone numbers?
Even says live music.
Switch to Yahoo Search and get straight to your answers. Start now at Yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
Remember when cigarette advertising was all over the place?
10 years after the signing of a landmark agreement restricting tobacco marketing, new federal data show it has had an enormous impact. The government projects 136 billion fewer cigarettes will be sold this year compared to a decade ago. That represents a 28% decline. American Legacy Foundation President Dr. Cheryl Hilton says while nearly 4,000 teens still try smoking every day,
youth smoking is at its lowest rate since 1979 when the smoking level of teens was first recorded.
Despite the gains, smoking remains the number one preventable cause of death in the U.S. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
High seas piracy. The Indian Navy reporting a victory against pirates in the Gulf of Aden. Officials say a patrol frigate sank a suspected pirate ship that had opened fire there. At the same time, owners of a seized Saudi oil supertanker, they're negotiating for release of the ship and its $100 million worth of crude. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
When shopping for holiday gadgets, some search engines get you lost in all the links, but not Yahoo Search. To prove it, we switched Mark's Google page with Yahoo and brought a mall Santa along for the ride.
Ho, ho, ho!
Man, I'm sick of mall Santas.
Ho!
You'll never get tired of how Yahoo Search helps you shop. Type a gift like digital camera.
Hey, there's popular brands, ratings, buyer's guides, all at the top of the page.
It's a miracle on... what street are we on?
Switch to Yahoo Search and get straight to your answers. Start now at Yahoo.com.
Yahoo!
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your calls and comments are welcome. Any subject, any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. 888-5-PETER-B. My lines are open for you this entire hour, and don't have the heartbreak of waiting till the end of the hour and getting trapped on hold and not getting to get your comment on the air. So call me right now. We can talk about Israel and Palestine, the Obama administration's intentions toward Iraq, Afghanistan. That's what we discussed last hour with Phyllis Bennis and Paul LaRudy. Also, Mountain House, California, above sea level but underwater. It was rated, perhaps falsely or incorrectly, by the New York Times as the most underwater community in America. 90%, they said, of the homes in a certain zip code are in trouble, where the value of the home has declined below the amount of the mortgage owed. And that's a dicey situation that people are facing all over the country. And we kicked off the show talking about media issues with Paul Waldman and fact that the Sunday news shows are still tilting to the right, even though the nation has shifted to the Democrats and arguably to a more leftist, or at least left of the hard right, and it's not being reflected in the corporate media so far. Those topics available, and you can talk about anything else that's in the news or on your mind. Tom Daschle has been named, at least reported, to be the nominee of Barack Obama to be Secretary of Health and Human Services and to help drive the health care reform policy. I think that's an interesting move. As we talked with Waldman earlier today, Daschle is both a wonk who has been, he published a book, and we interviewed him earlier this year in Washington about health care reform. And he also, of course, was the majority leader of the Senate. And so he will be poised to work well with the Democrats on Capitol Hill to shepherd the legislation through. And on that note, it appears to me that Obama is not going to repeat the mistakes, at least the obvious mistakes, of Bill and Hillary Clinton's attempt to reform health care in 1993. And I think that's one reason why he offered Hillary Secretary of State, because he didn't want her within a mile of the health care reform, not because he doesn't respect her or value what input she might offer, but because she's a lightning rod for the insurance companies, the HMOs, and others who are bitterly opposed to any health care extension or real reform. And so putting Daschle in there sends a signal. There was discussion of putting Daschle in the White House as the advisor on the health care issues, and instead that'll go to someone else, and Daschle will be over at HHS, subject, of course, to confirmation by his pals in the Senate, and it's hard to imagine that they would withhold that. So things are shaping up interestingly in Washington. I'm still waiting for the first true progressive to be named as a nominee to a cabinet post or high-level advisory position in the Obama administration. And I do understand the politics of this, and that in some cases the order of announcement is not totally in control of the Obama transition team. The Eric Holder Attorney General plan was leaked, or at least it leaked out. It wasn't necessarily a vicious leak. But one of the things that's going on is the transition team is sounding out key members of the Senate on the probability of confirmation for some of these top posts, the cabinet-level posts and others that require confirmation. And so then too many people know that, for example, there were calls made to the Hill about Eric Holder. Will you, Senator, vote to confirm Eric Holder, or will you hold against him the work he did for Bill Clinton? And one of the concerns there is that Eric Holder is, and I don't know the details of exactly how he may have been involved, but it is attributed that he was involved with the pardon process that led to the controversy over Clinton's last-minute pardon of fugitive financier Mark Rich. There's also a story that just came in by email this afternoon. Some investigators are looking into Eric Holder's role in a deal related to Chiquita Banana and its interests in South America. I don't know all the details there, but I'll just mention that it's out there, and you might be able to find it at one of your favorite progressive websites. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Join me in the Free Speech Zone today. We got Bob in Santa Cruz up first. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I've called about the Israeli situation.
Mm-hmm.
I've been opinionated about this a long time, and I'd just like to say that after about the middle 1990s, I stopped reading articles about Israel because there's nothing there. It's just the same old thing over and over again. And the real solution is really easy, and that's cutting off all the military aid to Israel, getting rid of the Jewish lobby in Congress and all the money we're giving them, because they don't have a tax base that's large enough to support that military.
Well, you make some interesting points, and I wouldn't put them in quite the terms that you used, but I do agree that the Israeli lobby in Washington is way too powerful, and that our financial support for Israel enables it to continue this grisly occupation of the Palestinians, and that I would support at least the threat of cutting off that financial aid, its gift money, to Israel. And also, I'd be very cautious about selling more arms, and in particular, advanced weapon systems to the Israelis. And I think that we need to try to move to the position of an honest broker between Israel and Palestine, instead of essentially standing firm with the Israelis and pointing our fingers, for the most part, at those evil Palestinians.
Well, if I take more of the point of view of those evil Israelis, the whole thing started off as a terrorist enterprise to get the English out of Palestine. And basically the idea was to send as many English coffins back to England so that the English government would pull out of occupied Palestine. So then the successful, like the Irgun terror group with Menachem Begin, they were successful in getting the English out, but now they have to discriminate against the Palestinians. And basically the Palestinians have just been kicked off their land and everybody's permitting it.
Well, I don't dispute that part of it, Bob. I think that Palestinians should have the right of return, and I do think that we need either a two-state solution or a one-state solution with guaranteed rights, equivalent rights for the Palestinians. I don't see a one-state solution as possible because of the religious and cultural identity of the nation of Israel. But I do think that we need to move forward.
Well,
on a path that recognizes, that recognizes the interests of the Palestinians and attempts to balance that with our long-term support for Israel.
See, one of the solutions that I always favored was relocating them to three places: New York, Miami, and Los Angeles. And since I used to live in Los Angeles, I thought, well, up in the Fairfax District, they're all over the place. They're already there. And I don't really care. I'm not anti-Jewish. I'm anti-Israeli.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
so
Bob,
basically,
Bob,
relocate them somewhere else and give the whole land back to the Palestinians,
mm-hmm.
and let the Arabs control it.
Okay. Well, Bob, I thank you for your comments. You do edge up to a kind of anger toward Jews, and I just want to say that
I make the comment when I was living in Los Angeles that mm-hmm. put them in my neighborhood, let them live with me,
mm-hmm.
but get them out of there where they're causing problems, because if they're in Los Angeles, they just assimilate.
Okay. I hear you, Bob, and I appreciate your call today. Let me know what you think. 888-5-PETER-B. Lines are open this entire hour. That's what we call the Free Speech Zone, and I welcome your comments. Pro or con, agree or disagree, 888-573-8372. And you can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. And Katrina just alerted me that the California State Supreme Court has agreed to hear challenges to Proposition 8, but they're not going to do it right away. It will be in scheduled for March sometime. And let me click to the news item here. One of the things I'm interested in is whether any kind of a stay has been issued because there's an interesting matter about those who have married since the Supreme Court decision in May up through Election Day, and what their rights are, because Prop 8 did not describe any retroactivity. And it could create a class of people who are already married, and the court would decline to intervene or change that status. Let me see here. The court refused to let... So it did refuse to let same-sex marriages resume while it considers the constitutionality. That was a 6-1 vote, with Justice Carlos Moreno, casting the dissenting vote. And let's see. At the urging of sponsors and opponents, they voted 6-1 to grant review of lawsuits challenging the initiative. One justice dissented. That's Joyce Kennard. And one of the things that we've been discussing on the program that I learned from Marjorie Cohn, the constitutional law professor, and this is in play before the Supreme Court relative to Prop 8, is that there are two types of initiative constitutional amendments. One's called an amendment, and that only requires a majority of the voters to pass, and the other's called a revision, which is viewed as a more substantive change to the Constitution, and I would argue that Prop 8 is a revision. That requires, before the people vote, two-thirds of both houses of the legislature approving it and putting it on the ballot. And since that didn't occur in this case, that does appear to be a technical exit for the Supreme Court to invalidate Proposition 8. So one of the other things that's really ironic and awkward is that Attorney General Jerry Brown is the attorney for the state of California. And because the voters passed Proposition 8, the Attorney General is charged with defending Proposition 8 before the state Supreme Court. Will Jerry Brown do that in a full-throated, wholehearted way? I kind of doubt it. We'll take a break and return. Your calls are welcome here in the Free Speech Zone. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic, one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
Turn the they protect your investments.
Custom painting.
Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Good evening, this is Thea Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now on southbound 101, just north of Andrew Molero State Park, we have a traffic collision with no injuries. On southbound 101 at Echo Valley Road, a big rig is blocking the right-hand turn lane. Taking a look at the Hollister-Gilroy area, right now we have a collision. A car has hit a pole on Cabernet Drive at Vineyard Estates Drive. Also on northbound 101, just north of eastbound Highway 152, we have a traffic collision with no injuries. CHP is on the scene. In weather tonight, there will be widespread low clouds and dense fog. Lows will be in the upper 40s to mid-50s. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a great evening and stay with the Peter B. Collins Show.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Free Speech Zone is on the air. Your calls are welcome right now. Lines are open toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Call me on your iPhone, that fancy BlackBerry, and we do accept calls from Bluetooth users. I hate Bluetooth, but it's the law in California. And so, is Hillary Clinton playing hard to get? Or is she actually torn over staying in the United States Senate or resigning in order to take Secretary of State in the Obama administration? As you know, I'm not Hillary's biggest fan. I do respect her, but I didn't support her for president. And I take exception in particular to some of her foreign policy positions that she articulated during the campaign. I thought on domestic issues, she was pretty good. And had she won the nomination, I could have supported her in the fall. But her commentary about Iran, that she would obliterate them, her support of the Kyle Lieberman Amendment last September, a year ago, those give me pause. And now she's saying, oh, she's torn. She's agonizing over the decision. And maybe it's agonizing over disclosing Bill Clinton's funding sources for his initiative, for his library, and for some of the freelance activities that he's undertaken since he left the presidency. So it's gotten a little confusing there, and it's possible that this was just a head fake to stroke Hillary Clinton, to support her supporters, to, you know, tilt in their direction, and that ultimately Obama will move on to another candidate for Secretary of State. Andy's joining us from New York. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing all right today.
A little Kazakhstan oil backsheesh for the old Clinton library, huh?
Well, and they released, or at least a reporter identified some sources of money either for the library or the Clinton Fund, including the Emir of Kuwait, the King of Morocco, some of the emirs from the United Arab Emirates, the Saudi royal family. And so right there, if Hillary Clinton wants to conduct diplomacy in the Middle East, her husband's interests conflict with her role as a potential Secretary of State.
Right. The New York Times did a long, I think, front page piece a couple months ago that, you know, went into a lot of detail with some of the dealings he had. It's pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Well, there's also this California grocery magnate, Ron Burkel, who is not, I don't consider him a demon, but he's very wealthy, and he's done some sweetheart deals with former President Clinton And we understand that about 20 million of the 100 million that he's earned since he left the White House has come from Burkle's Yucaipa Corporation. And we don't know what actually Bill Clinton did to earn that money. It looks like more of a gift.
Well, they've had close contacts for a long time. I'm sure there's different investment vehicles and properties that the Democratic Party helps out Ron Burkle with, because he seems to be definitely at the trough with the Democrats. He's been that way for a long time.
Yeah, he's very well connected, we can say.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Are we in the free speech zone?
Yes, we are. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I just told Katrina, if you were talking about Proposition 8, it just bothered me. You had a debate a while back with one of the proponents of Proposition 8, and he was from some religious
group. Yeah, he's a Catholic guy named Bill May.
Right, and he made a comment concerning religion, not just the Catholic religion, but religion had always been a force for good in the world. And I happen to be going to Prague in a few weeks, and when I go there, you know, it's right in your face that you see a statue of a guy named Jan Hus, who was burned at the stake. He was a Catholic bishop who tried to break away from the Catholic hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
say, and get a little autonomy. And he wasn't getting along with the Pope at the time. So they fooled him into going to a meeting where they were going to try to resolve things, but instead they burned him at the stake.
Oh, nice.
And that started, his name was Hus, that started the Husite Revolution. So for 200 years, from like 1415 to 1620, you had these Husites running around Eastern Europe, rampaging and pillaging, and all different religious factions at each other's throats. And one half to two-thirds of the population was decimated. This went on until the 30 Years' War to like 1620. And at that time, mercenaries were rounded up from the Holy Roman Empire, Spain, Italy, France, all got together, and 20,000 soldiers descended on Prague, and
mm-hmm.
they beat back the Hussites. And, you know, it was just, you know, utter destruction for 200 years. And these people, the Eastern Europeans, at least in the Czech Republic, don't forget that.
Andy, let me take a break, and we'll come back to you, because I know you have more to say, and I've got time, so we'll continue in a moment. Lines open, 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
If you transfer your IRAs, 401ks, or any retirement accounts today, we will add 10% to your full account value. $100,000 becomes $110,000, $400,000 becomes $440,000, and $700,000 becomes $770,000. My name is Stephen DeJohn, president of the DeJohn Advisory Team. I was on the cover of Senior Market Advisor magazine because I protect my clients' money, and I can guarantee an income for life. We don't recommend stocks, mutual funds, or variable annuities. These are risky securities. With securities, you have unlimited upside, but you also have unlimited downside. Our clients do not lose money in negative markets. Do you have a multi-generational IRA? Why not? It's been your right since 2001. Don't let Uncle Sam be your biggest beneficiary because your broker or banker is sleeping at the wheel. Call us right now at 866-515-6669 to receive your free video and brochure. We will then set up your free IRA and retirement checkup at one of our nationwide locations. Call 866-515-6669. It's a new year and it's time for change. Call 866-515-6669.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run. Here's Adam with a tip on running.
When you work out or run lately, have your knees and shins been hurting? How old are your shoes? A year? 2 years? The aches and pains could be your body's way of saying your shoes are toast. Running shoes usually last for around 400 miles worth of wear. If you average a few miles a few days per week, you're going to wear out those shoes in 6 to 8 months. Hi, this is Adam at Central Coast Running. Bring your old shoes in the store so we can see how they're doing. We'll let you know how much life they have left and perform a full gait analysis if it's time for a new pair. We don't want to sell you a pair of shoes if you don't need them, but we do want to help let you know if your shoes are good for you. Stop in and let us help keep you feeling good.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Remind you to please drink responsibly.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
People all across America have helped me keep the Peter B. Collins Show on the air in these difficult economic times, and I thank each and every one of you. If you'd like, visit my website, peterbcollins.com, and click on the link right there on the homepage that says, You Can Help. And my snail mail address is Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942.
That matters to you at this moment, but that's all that matters to me. How are you?
We're in the free speed zone. Lots of lines open, so don't be shy. Pick up your phone and give us a call. Let me know what's on your mind. This is your time to talk. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. We continue with our buddy Andy from New York. Andy, when are you going to Prague?
December 5th, I think.
Okay. Well, I will tell you everything I know in the Czech language. Dobrý den. That's good day or good morning.
Bom taki. You too.
Do you speak Czech?
Sakusim say. I try hard.
Yeah, okay. And you go there for business?
I've been there before.
You go there for business or?
Pleasure.
Okay. Because one of my cousins married a beautiful Czech woman in July. In fact, I think it was on 7707 in Prague. And finally, immigration allowed her in the United States in September of 2008. It was quite a struggle.
Yeah, you have to have a visa to come here, I believe.
Yeah.
From Prague, that's pretty difficult. From Czech Republic, it's
mm-hmm.
pretty difficult.
Yeah.
So to go the other way. It used to not be that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it's always been that way. But I've known Czech people that have come here, but now I think it's tough.
Yeah, I know a couple, the Misha and Mishas. They came here. She was working as an editor at Lucasfilm, and she was able to get a visa, an H-1B, you know, arranged through the
sure.
employer. But they, since that time, they have had some difficulties traversing back and forth. So it can be complicated. But it's a beautiful place. I was there just once in 1994, really, as the whole liberation was taking hold. And it was a fascinating and fabulous time to be there.
Right. In 1996, I actually had a semester at Vysoké škola ekonomická, the Prague Economics School, and I took a few classes, and one of the classes was in Czech for a semester.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I first got in. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good.
Anyway,
anything else you wanted to add? I didn't want to cut you off there.
Yeah, I just wanted to say we don't have the institutional memory in this country of what happens when fanatical people get in charge and how much pain and destruction it can cause when you have demagogues, and especially when you get religious groups that start playing in the political scene. And I think in Europe they more understand that because they have the institutional memory that we just do not have there, because it's in their history. They have the monuments. You know, in 1620, the battles ended between the Hussites and the other religious groups, and particularly the Holy Roman Empire came in with their forces, and they subdued the Czechs in the Battle of White Mountain. And at that time, 27 nobles who helped were on the wrong side were hung in Prague Square, and there's still memorials to them. So even today, they're still memorialized, you know, as trying to escape demagogues and the hegemony of a foreign forces. And we just do not have that institutional memory here of how bad it can get.
Yeah.
That's the shame.
Well, and I was talking with Dr. Robin Myers on our program last week, and he makes the case. He's a Christian pastor. He makes the case that one of the greatest dangers to our nation is Christian fascism. And I think that we see this collusion here, a crossover of the interests of church and state. And I'm very concerned about it, the way that religious groups use the political process and use their religious organizations, the pulpits, the church bulletins, and the networks to raise almost $40, $45 million. And half of that came from Mormon interests. And I'm not demonizing the Mormons. They do have a right to participate in the political process as individuals, but not as religious groups. And I think that lines were crossed, and I'm very disappointed that people who consider themselves to be devout religious practitioners would essentially allow a campaign to try to pass this ban to remove a human right, a civil right, from a group of people who they don't approve of. And you know, that this is a kind of crossing that firewall that I find really problematic.
Right. He's from Oklahoma City, right? He's from Oklahoma. He's right on, spot on, him and Naomi Wolf.
Yep.
And they've got it. They've got it nailed. They saw it, I think, before a lot of people did, what's happened.
All right, Andy, thank you very much. Appreciate your call today.
All right, great. Take care of yourself.
We're in the free speech zone, 888-5 Peter B. And let's see, we got Ron in San Francisco. Ron, welcome to the free speech zone.
Hi, Peter. It's not a good time to make nice with the Republicans. They haven't won an election in several tries, 2000, 2004, 2006. They even played some games. So they wouldn't let us in. The thing is that Lincoln and both Kennedy tried to put Republicans in around them, and look what happened to them. I don't think it's a smart thing. I think the Obama folks need to go after the Bush people for their crimes so that they won't interfere with their agenda. If they're too busy trying to cover their own butts for their crimes, they don't have that much energy to go after the Obama agenda. But,
I think that's a really interesting political take there, Ron. Number one, I agree with you that Obama should not unilaterally just say we're moving on and we're not going to hold Republicans accountable for what occurred before. Secondly, I don't believe that Republicans have changed their stripes to the point where Obama can effectively include most types of Republicans. I mean, there may be some exceptions of people who can put their own partisanship aside to work in a Democratic administration. I'm highly doubtful of that. And I just think that while a lot of people who aren't that political like the way he is striking a tone of bipartisanship, postpartisanship, inclusion, whatever term you prefer, I think, as you do, that it's a political mistake and that it will come back to bite him. We saw in the early Clinton years the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then the health care debacle. And both of those were huge political miscalculations by a guy who's generally regarded as a really shrewd politician.
Well, the Democrats are like codependent females in a belligerent alcoholic relationship, and they roll over for the belligerent father figures. What they need to do is realize that if they have election integrity, there is no way that they can lose. If they keep conciliatory handouts toward the Republicans, they're not going to get their agenda. The Republicans don't want that. And what needs to happen is they need to secure the electoral process, and they won't lose.
Mm-hmm. Very well put. Thank you, Ron. Good to hear from you today. 888-5 Peter B. Lines are open if you'd like to join me here in the Free Speech Zone. This just in from Washington. Henry Waxman, Democrat from Los Angeles, who is challenging the Dean of the House of Representatives, John Dingell. He's been there since, like, when I was born in the 50s. Dingell is the Michigan Democrat who chairs the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And he has been a pro-automaker force for a long, long time. This is the committee that will pass any global warming legislation, any legislation addressing global warming and the blueprint for the green economy. And I applaud Henry Waxman for being willing to, bruise some egos and challenge the Dean of the House, because Waxman wants to chair that committee and essentially drive the bus on the environmental issues that we need to address. And I support this, because I think Dingell, who is in his 80s, he doesn't seem to be feeble in any way, but it's just a point that I think he has been a longtime loyalist to the interests of Detroit automakers, and this is a time when we need a new view. And I think it would be nicer if Dingell would see the handwriting on the wall and quietly step aside. But he and his wife, who is a General Motors executive and also a very active Debbie Dingell in the Democratic Party, they have been rallying their forces. Barney Frank is supporting Dingell. Many of the progressive Californians are supporting Waxman. Nancy Pelosi is trying to stay neutral, but she's not. She dumped $10,000 into a primary opponent of John Dingell just a couple of years ago, and that's something that really stands out. It generally is bad form for a speaker. I think at the time she was the minority leader, but for someone of her stature in the party to support a challenger to a long-term incumbent Democrat, that is considered bad form. And clearly, there is bad blood between Pelosi and Dingell. Nevertheless, she says, I'm the speaker. I'm staying out of this. Waxman, if you want to do this, you may. So today, Waxman won the nomination to unseat John Dingell. But Dingell's forces believe that they have enough votes in the 260-member, I got to get used to that number, Democratic caucus for the incoming January membership. So this is going to be an interesting intramural battle, and I hope it goes better than the one that allowed Joe Lieberman to hold on to his key committee chairmanship while giving up a post that he didn't care about. And I don't think that they properly disciplined the wayward senator from Connecticut. 888-5 Peter B. And up next, we've got Richard in Eureka listening on KGOE. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing today?
Okay, thanks.
Great, great. Listen, I thought it was interesting, the previous caller, and the Israel stuff. I think this is one of the things that's going to be really, one of the big things that Obama is going to be facing in the new presidency. And it was this other guy, this other caller, he left a lot of stuff out. All right, and, I'll start out here by saying I've got a pro-Israel bias, but mm-hmm. I have to say in the same breath that I really detest a lot of their tactics and a lot of the stuff that they've been doing over the years with the settlements, breaking them down, putting them up. I mean,
Well, and Richard, let me just reflect what I think you're saying, because I think we may be in pretty close agreement here. I fully support the right of Israel to exist as a state.
Absolutely.
What I want is to see the heavy-handed occupation end and a way forward that is not imposed by me or some other outsider, but where consensus is developed between the interests of the state of Israel and the leaders of the Palestinian people. And, you know, there are a lot of ugly folks on both sides of those tables. There are extreme Israeli politicians who I find reprehensible in the way they operate and articulate their points of view.
Right. Well,
and likewise, you know, we don't have a real great array of leaders on the Palestinian side who we can look to as reliable counterparts in negotiations. So
well, you know,
I just want to be clear that it's a very difficult.
That last bit of you know, I think that we're not getting the Palestinian point of view a lot, you know, in our media and stuff. And you know, I seek things out, you know, internet and stuff like that. So I think I have a better perspective of it, you know, as an American Jew. But, you know, look, as long as we've got these people that have power in Israel that are just as freaking fanatical as, you know, our right-wing Christians and the, you know, the Taliban types, and, you know, as long as those people hold an extent of power, and then, like you said, on the other side, too, there's those on the Palestinian side. And, you know, these people are always going to bump heads. They're just never going to. We have to take the power away from those people and put it back into the hands. The majority of Palestinians and Israelis don't want this anymore.
Yeah. Well, and fundamentally, I don't want to support any occupation anywhere in the world.
No way.
It doesn't work.
I agree.
It's ugly and it's undemocratic.
It's worse than ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some of the tactics have been awful.
Yeah. Richard, I got to run to a break, but
right
I thank
on.
You for your call, and I'm glad you're listening and checking in with us and offering your point of view. That's what I like. That's what makes this a show. A show that I enjoy. 888-5-PETER-B. There's still room for your call before the end of the hour. 888-573-8372. This program is produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good evening, this is Thea Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Taking a look at Highway 1 just north of Castle House, we have a two-vehicle collision with an ambulance responding. On southbound 101 at Echo Valley Road, a big rig is blocking the right-hand turn lane. A tow truck is on the way there. Now looking at the Hollister-Gilbert area, on Cabernet Drive at Vineyard Estates Drive, there is a collision and CHP is on the scene. In weather, tonight there will be widespread low clouds and dense fog. Lows are going to be in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Here are some temperatures right now. Monterey is currently 53 degrees, Salinas is 56 degrees and clear, and Santa Cruz is 54 degrees and clear. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fantastic evening and a safe commute, and stay tuned to KRXA and the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'd advertise, you know. That's Emily Dickinson, and this is Barbara Mossberg, your host of the Poetry Slowdown, inviting you to join me in celebrating this little recluse whose whole life was largely spent in her upstairs bedroom. I say largely because it was a huge life, enormous, outsized. I say whole life because it was epic, heroic, tragic, comic, witch and clown and lover, bursting with pain and joy, an intense life, a live birthday performance, December 13th at 4 p.m. at the Cherry Center in Carmel, and here on KRXA 540 a.m., December 7th at 3 p.m., and on December 14th at noon. What her life means to the world, to you and me, around the world with Emily Dickinson as my traveling companion, this quirky nobody who never left her room, so they say.
what the donation limits are into a PAC versus a leadership PAC. And I don't know what the limits are on disbursements out of our PAC as compared to Pelosi's leadership PAC.
But then the individuals in those PACs can give larger amounts than $250.
It's up to what, $2,500 or $3,200,
right,
whatever it is. Yeah, I believe so. And I also think that I don't think you can take corporate contributions, but I think you can take contributions from other than individuals. And again, I'm a little murky on that. If anybody is a legal beagle who knows the ins and outs of this, you got a minute and a half. If you can call, you can straighten this out free.
As long as they're in a pact.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, thank you for explaining that, Peter. Thank you very much. You have a good evening.
All right. And, Connie, are we going to form a pack, or is this the end of it? Huh?
Well, I don't have much money, but I if the next time that Mr. Obama runs, I will continue to send him my $10 and $15.
Uh-huh. Well, Connie, I'll just tell you a quick story. I worked at a radio station in San Francisco, KNBR. And my job was to follow the rush boy every day. It was dirty work, and I was happy to do it. And one of the things that I did was, on the air, I proposed the creation of a political action committee whose purpose was to outlaw political action committees. And I wanted to raise money from my listeners and say, write a check to Nancy Pelosi or Dianne Feinstein and say, the reason we're giving you this money is to support legislation to stop this practice.
I see.
And I was blocked by the management of the radio station because it turned out the company that owned it, Susquehanna at the time, had their own PAC. And they didn't want this loudmouth liberal on their flamethrower Rushbo radio station forming a PAC to end political action committees.
That's funny.
So they bounced me and replaced me with some squeaky sports talk guy.
Well, I'm glad you ended up where you are.
All right, Connie.
Thank you.
Thanks for checking in today. And thank you for listening and calling and emailing the Peter B. Collins Show. I'll be on the Air America stream, airamerica.com, tomorrow morning Pacific time, 6 to 9 a.m. That's 9 to noon Eastern, if you dare.
Betrayals to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds?
We're talking with Coach Dennis about how to get fit and get rich while helping others do the same.
That's right, Peter. You can earn extra money from your home or office on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Your health, your body, and your net worth come down to one thing: taking action. Control your own destiny. As an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a better life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. Hundreds of other successful online coaches nationwide are getting fit and getting rich and living the dream lifestyle that comes with a thriving internet business. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It couldn't be easier. Get fit and get rich. It's all done part-time, it's all done online, and it's all done when you have the time. Call me now, 702-299-5789. No obligation, that's 702-299-5789. Or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com. That's fitandgetrich.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Labor Department with official word of something you may have noticed, prices are dropping. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy talking to people who are paying less.
Low gas prices are definitely a nice thing to see at the pump.
Just a couple of months ago, the fear was inflation. Now some economists say today's numbers, which show a cut in the cost of living, could mean a jump start for the ailing economy.
It'll make it easier for people to spend money. Their wages will be worth more. So it probably will aid the recovery.
But while lower prices may be exactly what cashed-out consumers need,
I'm hoping they go down a lot more.
Prolonged price drops would cause serious deflation, potentially putting more stores out of business and more people out of work.
The government says the continuing drop in prices is the biggest since records started being kept in 1947. Federal Reserve with a report today that CBS's Barry Bagnato reports is less than optimistic.
For America's workers, the message from the Fed is don't expect a very happy new year.
It projects unemployment could rise to as high as 7.6%, a level not seen since the 1992 recession. Currently, the nation's jobless rate is 6.5%. The Fed doesn't see it returning to that level for 2 or 3 years.
No automobile bailout this week. That's the word from Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr.
For the moment, the auto industry loan appears to be all but dead in Congress, though it will surely be revived under an Obama administration. Meanwhile, carmakers say bankruptcy is really not an option, because customers won't buy cars from companies that may not last long enough to cover those warranties.
California Supreme Court agrees today to hear three separate challenges to Prop 8, the measure that bans same-sex marriage there. Displeased is Prop 8 supporter Randy Thompson, the president of SaveCalifornia.com.
It's unfortunate that the judges are giving time to some mushy, subjective arguments of gay activists who reject the clear reading of the state constitution and the clear reading of Proposition 8.
Everyone should have the right to marry.
Nikki Grist, head of the Alternatives to Marriage Project.
It's really important that the court hear this challenge, because Proposition 8 has caused tremendous pain and outrage, not only among same-sex couples.
But she says their friends and families, too. Cases won't be heard till next spring. Piracy. This year, 39 ships hijacked in the Gulf of Aden. The